Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio! Anyone listening? Anyone listening? Knock, knock! Listen, listen! This is Sammy Callahan, and you're listening to him on Yakuza Kick Radio. You better all listen!
Yakuza Radio. Love the name, Yakuza.
You know what I'm saying? My homie J-Cat and the homie Eric.
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
All you had to do was listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look what that got you, homie. Fuck that. Black D. Holla.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town, and it's Yakuza Kick Radio. And we're taking over.
Thursday, March 31st, 2011. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris. And as always, my co-host, Eric Williams. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, J-Cat. Another fun, exciting show here on a Thursday evening. And, you know, I was getting kind of nervous there with, you know, the call-in and all types of shit. But, hey, you're on the air.
Hey, so. You know, I decided to pull up last minute, keep everybody on the edge of their seats, from my co-host to the, you know, everybody. Just got to keep it interesting.
Hey, maybe 1 week I'll do that.
Yeah, not a good look. So, but anyway, guys, we're, you know, in here for another show. We have a packed show lineup similar to what we did last week. But before we get into any of that, I'd like to share with everybody, this past Saturday, which was 2 days before my birthday, I got the privilege to witness what was, in my opinion, definitely match of the year. Now, with Best of the Best looming around the corner, who knows if that's going to stay intact. But as of right now, no question, hands down, match of the year. And I'd venture to say, if that match was last year, it would have ended as match of the year. And that was Jersey All-Pro putting on the match, the dream match of Sammy Callahan versus Low Ki in South River, New Jersey. And that match was so hard-hitting. It was so unbelievable that, yeah, man, I can't say enough about it. Those guys kicked the shit out of each other, as you would expect them to. It did not disappoint. You know, Low Ki won via Dragon Sleeper, and but either way. And it kicked off a feud that's more or less going to be, you know, Homicide, Low Ki, and Monster Mac, Steve Mac, however you'd like to call him, and the United States Death Machine, which is comprised of... John Moxley, Sammy Callahan, and Chris Dickinson. So, yeah, they kind of aligned a little bit with Brody. I don't know if they're going to, you know, switch that over there. Not really sure what they're doing there. But either way, fantastic match. Unbelievable match. The undercard saw some pretty good action. It had, when I got there, I might have got there a little late, but it had Rich Swann versus Chris Dickinson. And that was a pretty good match. You know, Swan, man, he's just an unbelievable athlete. I still can't get over him not being in Best of the Best, because when you talk about the best high flyers in the United States, you got to mention Rich Swann within the first few names you mentioned, because he's unbelievably talented, young, up and coming, and yeah, he's going to do big things in his career. So, Yeah, there was that. There was Dan Moff versus John Moxley. That was a pretty good match. What else did they have? Well, they had Homicide versus Brody, which, you know, it kind of went down as a build match where it was going to be, you know, Homicide kept going for the chair. The ref kept pulling the chair from him. Brody ended up getting the win, you know, and then, you know, they came out with the interference and everything with the United States Death Machine. And, you know, then you had Mac and Loki come back out and, proceed to beat the shit out of Chris Dickinson. Dickinson caught the cop killer, and they took his shoes, you know. This is what happens. I might, you know, touch on some more other things that I had to say about that show. Like I said, I mean, that match alone is your money's worth plus. You know, any show that you go to, you pay your $20 or $15 or whatever the case may be, when you get into that building, if you get a match that is to the caliber of Loki versus Sami Callihan, you're getting what you paid for. And Jersey All-Pro did just that for every fan in attendance. And I highly encourage everybody to get the DVD when it does come out. So, yeah, big shout-out to them. And, you know, look for some more stuff like that in the future out of them with this big feud that just kicked off. Yeah, we definitely hope for a rematch of that in the future. Okay, off of that, I wanted to mention something of WWE related, which, you know, we got WrestleMania coming up. I'm not going to go into the whole WrestleMania spiel because I think they have enough fans. They do enough promoting of themselves. I don't really need to run the card down. I'll do a review of WrestleMania next week when it's all said and done. But I think they have a big enough hype machine that I don't need to sit here and build their show up for them. So everybody knows what's going on there. On a note of something that happened WWE-wise, well, apparently GLAAD, which, sorry, I don't know what it stands for, but it's on the gay and lesbians and whatever else. The gay and lesbian group, they apparently got very upset about The Rock and John Cena seem to be not sensitive enough towards the gay community, and they're not being sensitive towards bullying because they keep talking mean about each other, and that's not nice, and whatever else that they said. So they decided that they're going to be working hand-in-hand with the writing staff on the WWE in order to make sure that they're all sensitive enough towards bullying and, you know, different genres and, you know, the gay community, and they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So they're going to be helping their writers, a.k.a. destroying every fucking promo that's ever happened in the WWE. So following that, Michael Cole decided that he was going to tweet to Josh Matthews, and he tweeted to him, faggot, right? So... apparently that's a bad move, you know, when the gay and lesbian people already just got involved. So my opinion, okay, let's keep this movement strong. You guys want to be sensitive and everything? Fire this guy. We need to hire a new commentator right away, right? So I went out there and I found a few possibilities for new commentator that might be adequate. You know, it might be more sensitive towards that topic. And Eric, if you could just play me the video from the first guy that I had in mind.
Our next guest is originally from Danville, Illinois. He enjoys cold beer and hot music. Says that he and his mom don't see eye to eye on his love life. And he claims that his job has cost him several relationships. Please welcome Robert Faggot. Faggot is rather an odd name.
Yeah, you know, it is an odd name.
Okay, so that was the first guy. Now, I know that guy might be hard to dig up because, you know, listen, that's from the 80s Love Connection. I don't know where to find this guy. I don't even know where to start. So I said, you know what, let me get a little more current. There's another guy that does voiceovers for animal videos online. His name is Randall, and for those of you who don't know Randall's work, listen to this wildlife video and imagine this guy ringside commentating on a match.
This is the Honey Badger. Watch it run in slow motion. It's pretty badass. Look, it runs all over the place. Whoa, watch out, says that bird. Ew, it's got a snake. Oh, it's chasing a jackal. Oh, my gosh. Oh, the honey badgers are just crazy. The honey badger has been referred to by the Guinness Book of World Records as the most fearless animal in all of the animal kingdom. It really doesn't give a shit. If it's hungry, it's hungry. Ew, what's that in its mouth? Oh, it's got a cobra. Oh, it runs backwards. Now watch this. Look, a snake's up in the tree. Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a shit. It just takes what it wants. Whenever it's hungry, it just, ew, and it eats snakes? Oh my god, watch it dig. Look at that digging. The honey badger is really pretty badass. They have no regard for any other animal whatsoever. Look, and it's just grunting and, ew, eating snakes. Ew, what's that, a mouse? Oh, that's nasty. Oh, they're so nasty. Oh, look, it's chasing things and eating them. The honey badgers have a fairly long body, but a distinctly thick set, broad shoulders, and, you know, their skin is loose, allowing them to move about freely, and they twist around. Now, look, here's a house full of bees. You think the honey badger cares? It doesn't give a shit. It goes right into the house of bees to get some larvae. How disgusting is that? It eats larvae. Ew, that's so nasty. But look, the honey badger doesn't care. It's getting stung like 1,000 times. It doesn't give a shit. It's hungry. It doesn't care about being stung by bees. Nothing can stop the honey badger when it's hungry. Oh, what a crazy fuck. Look. Ew, it's eating larvae. That's disgusting. There it is, running in slow motion again. See? Now, what's interesting is that other animals, like these birds here, they just like to wait around until the honey badger's done eating, and then it swoops in to pick up the scraps. It says, you do all the work for us, honey badger, and we'll just eat whatever you find. How's that? What do you say, stupid? Look at this bird. Thanks for the treat, stupid. Hey, come back here, says the honey badger. Birds don't care. And you know what? The jackals do it, too. Look at these little dogs. They're like, thanks, stupid. Thanks for the mouse. See you later. The honey badger does all the work while these other animals just pick up the scraps. At nighttime, the honey badger goes hunting because it's hungry. Look. Here comes a fierce battle between a king cobra and a honey badger. I wonder what'll happen. Look at this. There's the honey badger just eating a mouse. And then look. Get away from me, says the snake. Get away from me. Honey badger don't care. Honey badger smacks the shit out of it. And the snake comes back and it lashes right at the honey badger. Oh, little does the honey badger know, FYI, it's been stung. It's been bitten by the snake. So while it's eating the snake, ew, that's disgusting. Meanwhile, the poisonous venom is seeping through the honey badger's body, and it passes out. Look at that sleepy fuck. Now, the honey badger is just going to pass out for a few minutes, and then it's going to get right back up and start eating all over again, because it's a hungry little bastard. Look at this. Like nothing happened. The honey badger gets right back up and continues eating the cobra. How disgusting. And of course, what does the honey badger have to eat for the next 2 weeks? Cobra. The honey badger.
Yes, so that's Randall. And imagine if Randall can teach us that much about wildlife, imagine what he can interject into such an entertaining match that John Cena might be involved in. Oh, the comments that can come out of that. And the sensitivity towards the gay community would be, I think, about adequate. Without further ado and without any more of my my babbling on about my various other topics, let me welcome back to the show the half-breed, Billy Graham.
Yo, you there?
Yeah, what's up, Billy? Yep.
What the hell have you got me chasing tonight, man? I swear to God, I first got to say this, man. I've got enough heat. already been misunderstood due to the exchange of certain euphemisms with in flame wars on the internet. So I'd just like to say that I've got lots of friends in the gay community. I do not endorse any kind of bashing or anything. I think you did make a point, you know, as far as all that goes, but it's not my issue right now, really. But, man, that's kind of would be
there's
cool.
No bashing
That would be kind of cool if that guy was the new commentator.
Absolutely.
Geez, listen, I'm not going to try to run the show or nothing tonight. Sorry about all that. We're going to have a pile of calls coming in for you at 9:30 from a few friends. So I want to kind of, if I may, kind of just touch on a couple things.
Sure.
I mean, to say the least, I'm still reeling from all this shit, man. And, you know, I mean, bottom line for me is no matter what, I'm, you know, and I guess it's to be expected, but of course, I'm getting thrown under a bus on all this shit by a lot of people. It's probably going to be, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to ever book me again. Like, you know, despite what the fans want, despite the fact that every day, all day long, I get emails, messages, chat, blippity bloops, all day long from every corner of this globe. We want Cult Fiction. We want a Cult Fiction coming back to CZW. Contrary to some people's opinions, I'm not inciting anybody. The only thing I can say is that I'm not the one that makes these decisions. I'm willing to go. Cult Fiction's ready to go. Certainly still want to entertain all the fans. I don't think I'm anywhere near done doing the things that I can do to entertain the wrestling fans. But I just simply say, you know, this is not my decision. You have to talk to the people that make these decisions and let them know what you want. I'll tell you what, the top of the show, man, hearing you hype that Jersey All-Pro show, it kind of, man, I stepped out of myself for a couple minutes. It was really weird in the midst of all the shit that's been going on to actually, like, almost be like a fan again for a minute. I mean,
yeah.
That shit sounded all really excited. I mean, I can't, you know, I'm a huge, despite any past feuds or whatever you want to call it, I mean, I'm a huge Sammy Callahan fan. I think the guy is a tremendous talent, a total package. Huge fan of John Moxley. Love Chris Dickinson. And not Chris, as far as Chris Dickinson goes, I mean, we got to be friends recently, and I mean, he's a guy that we think a lot alike. We have a lot of the same ethics and sensibility and tastes and everything from horror films to what we think needs to happen in professional wrestling. And I think he's a huge talent. You know, can't say enough good about him. I love Homicide. I mean, love the guy, love his work. Love Moff, man. I'm a fan of Loki's work. I don't know him real well. Only worked with him one time. Also, who am I leaving out of that mix? There was somebody else you mentioned in that. Well, geez, I done fucked up. But I literally, I mean, man, that shit sounds really good. I can't wait to see it myself. I mean, I'll be trying to get a hold of a DVD of that because
yeah, absolutely. That was a dream match.
Sounds like some really good shit. But back to my own thing. I mean, you know, everything that's went down, I mean, very obviously, you know, in the business, there's always been this climate of, you know, what happens in the back stays in the back and all this stuff. Well, you know, I'm sorry that I don't think that was ever intended. I mean, you know, it's a double-edged sword, man, and I'm not a guy that's went out here and, you know, exposed storylines, told every little thing that goes on behind the scenes. Every time I didn't like something somebody does, I come out and I start bitching like a fucking wimp. You know, and certainly not the motivation for anything that I got myself involved in here. But, you know, the whole, you know, 100-year institution that's facilitated a criminal-like atmosphere, you know, where these kinds of things can be perpetrated and get so carried away. That mentality obviously continues today, and I dare say that I don't know if it's because people have been so conditioned or schooled in such a twisted fashion that they think that this is just the party line that you toe, and, you know, they're not taking any responsibility that by, you know, bottom line is, you know, the people that are performing out there, they're the talent. And they're the draw. They're what sells the tickets. They're the ones that are sacrificing their bodies. And, you know, so it's like, you know, when you sacrifice your integrity as a person and you turn a blind eye, and the only thing I can think of is that you are so conditioned to only caring about your own spot, your own star, fitting in with a clique, thinking you're doing the right thing, and I think it speaks volumes as to the cause of the deplorable conditions of the business and of, the deplorable conditions that the talent is treated by owners, promoters, management traditionally. And I'm not throwing everybody under the bus. There's certainly been some people that are anomalies. I mean, I said it last week. I could never say enough good about John Zandig, you know. But anyway, I mean, bottom line for me is, I guess I'm pretty much, you know, I've got a big no Billy Graham, you know, with the red circle and the red line across me, and this is just the excuse that some people have been waiting for, I guess, this anomaly called Billy Graham, you know, the guy that shouldn't be there, the guy that shouldn't have a spot, the guy that's not an athlete, you know, the old man. It's like this whole situation, what's happened, has basically created a situation where it's going to be just the excuse that people need behind the scenes to mark me as an instigator, a troublemaker, a snitch, a blabbermouth, trouble, and somebody they don't need around. And it does hurt my feelings. There's been several people that, you know, I love them like family, and they've hurt my feelings really, really bad this week over this stuff. And I got to reiterate something I kind of tried to put out there online, that I do not in any way have any change of my position over what the issues were. I don't have any change in my disgust, my resentment, or my lack of acceptance for the things that I took exception and issue to. I am troubled that I am forced by these things to not really be the person that I've tried to be in my life, you know. And so I got to say that, you know, I never set out, you know, to revel in the destruction of another human being or of any promotion or a place that provides work for anybody, or a spotlight or a stage, or helps anybody, you know, elevate themselves as a performer, help them build their fan base, help them get experience, reach the fans. But, you know, on the same token, I mean, I don't want to revel in someone else's destruction, but these people that are, you know, first of all, putting it all on me, and, you know, there's people that are now, you know, I guess I don't need to beat around the bush. I mean, you know, you put IWA out of business. I hope you're fucking happy. You know, you cost us work. You took something away from me as a fan. You know, you ruined somebody's life. You know, it's like, first of all, you know, it's not something I would want to take credit for, even if that were the case. I'd try to deny it, but, you know, targeting me and claiming that I'm the man that single-handedly ruined Ian Rotten's life and shut IWA Mid-South down, I think it's a joke. I think it's not true.
I don't think that's fair at all.
It's a blame game, and that, you know. So, you know, I'm getting everything from, you know, threats of violence to, shunned, chastised, publicly called out and humiliated by people that are supposed to be my friends. Once again, people, you know, 15 and 20 years younger than me telling me about life. And so if, you know, the bottom line is, if this is the end of me in the wrestling business, you know, I can only say, you know, I did my best to walk a line. I always gave 100%, you know, to everything I've done. I've always been appreciative of the fans. I've been appreciative of the opportunities that I've been given. I've been appreciative of the opportunities that Cult Fiction, you know, were given. I'd certainly like more of those opportunities. I never set out to hurt anybody's feelings. I never set out to betray anyone. I never set out to just run my mouth incessantly with no cause and no purpose. I certainly, maybe, you know, having the pent-up anger and frustration for so long, you know, we all know I came out swinging, you know, not just with my hands, but with my feet. I'm trying to now kind of put myself back to being the person that I am, and letting some of it go. And like I said, this does not mean I'm reversing my opinion. It doesn't mean that I have any more acceptance of things that I find to be despicable, you know, cowardly, criminal, reckless.
Right.
But, you know, the bottom line is, I also, I guess, got to put a leash around my own self, you know, try to control my own faults as a person. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to revel in it. I'm not going to celebrate it. And I never really tried to, but, you know, I get a little carried away with my spoofing and my parodying and my making light. So that's something I want to, you know, for those that I got a little carried away on that, I'm making a little step back on that. You know, like, I don't need to beat a dead horse. However, there are going to be some people that you're going to have on the phone here in a couple minutes.
I have a call, and I just kind of want to get something off my chest on the topic and then take that call. How I feel on the topic as a fan, and again, this is me talking, this isn't Billy, but the way I see it is, you know, Ian had done a lot of very, very bad things business-wise through the years. Now, yes, he did run a very good company at a certain point. He brought in tremendous amounts of talent. He helped boost talent. That's fine. But there's a lot of people that lost out on paydays. There's a lot of people that got screwed over. There were liberties taken. There were different things that shouldn't have been done in that business. Now, as an owner of a business, if you run bad business and you lose your business, that's nobody's fault but your own. That's my personal opinion. I'm not in his shoes. I can't say that it was someone else's fault. I can't say that it wasn't someone else's fault. But from an outsider's perspective, you really can't blame anybody but yourself if you run your own business badly. So that's my own feeling on it. I don't think Billy should take blame for it. Now, some people that have been wronged, yeah, they might clap their hands or they might take it as some form of success if your company does fail, but it's not because they had any doings in the company failing. Am I accurate at all on that? Or?
Yeah, no, I mean, I wish none of this shit would ever happen. None of it. None of it.
Right.
I wish that, you know, that company was back where it was 8 years ago, like providing some of the, it was the hottest indie in the business. I mean, Bull wrote an awesome note about it a couple of days ago, about the potential, about where they were. There's nothing to take joy in losing another avenue. You know, when I see, you know, friends worrying about the money they're going to lose to feed their children, you know, somebody I care about, you know what I mean? And then somehow it's my fault, you know. You know, and like I said, this thing with you know, like I haven't, like, my life itself has been so rough. I mean, I've been open about it all the last year. I've been suicidal for a fucking year, you know what I mean? And, you know, CZW to me, I mean, it's been like, you know, that one thing I still have, you know, that means so much to me, you know. So to have it not there, it ain't doing me any good, I can tell you that. But like I said, if this is the end of me in the wrestling business, man, like, the only thing I can say to all the people that support me, man, all the fans that support me, my friends, the people that are entertained by what I contribute, you know, the people that like Cult Fiction, you know, like, I can't make it happen. You know, I can't knock down the door and write my name. I can't pencil myself in, people, you know. So if it really matters to you, if you really want to see me still around, man, then you're going to have to make your voices heard, because right now the only voices that are being heard is fuck Billy Graham. And that's I'm just being fucking blunt about it, man, you know.
Well, we're not done. You know, we're going to make sure that we keep on this. We're going to make sure that you're not done. And I just don't want to leave this guy online any longer. And I'd like to welcome to the show, brother of J.C. Bailey, Joe Bailey.
Hi, guys. I'd like to start off by thanking Billy, CZW, all the Cult Fiction fans. Everybody that loves my brother and still supports him online. It really makes me proud. I know it makes my father proud to see everybody that is putting him in good light. I just want to call and say, because I know I'm not in the business, I know somewhat of the business, but Ian Rotten wasn't a good guy. He ruined his own business. The end of that is all this talk of how my brother passed away. It wasn't due to drugs. I don't know what all is being said. I've just seen a little bit through Billy, a little bit through other people. It had nothing to do with drugs. It was because of the business. JC loved being out there, loved seeing his fans, loved doing work for all you guys. And to know how much effort he put into doing that, he got out of prison, and within 24 hours, he was on a plane to Philadelphia to work for CZW. He didn't, I mean, he went and saw his mom and his dad. He didn't go get a piece of ass. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm a guy, 3 years in prison. You get out, and within 24 hours, you're on a plane to go do more work. That's got to show something of how much you care for the business.
And most exciting opportunity and honor that I ever had in the business was that night with your brother.
And I thank you for that. Like I said, I haven't seen everything out there, and I'm glad I haven't. What I have seen is I've seen Billy. I've seen other guys all you guys that have Facebooked me, that you guys put him in a good light. And it disgusts me that he put so much heart into this business. And then just to see people that didn't even know him, that just marks out there that had no idea, run their mouth saying that he was a drug addict. What he did in his first life had nothing to do with him in the business. And no, he did not die because of drugs. He died because he was out there giving all he had. I mean, there was times he should have been up here seeing family that he hadn't seen for years, but he had to go to Philadelphia, to Detroit, to Indianapolis to work a show, and he missed out on opportunities he could have had because he didn't want to let people down.
He never did.
Like I said, I'd just like to thank all you guys out there that still put him in a good light and keep his name alive, because it does. It makes all of us real Baileys proud. And this, has anybody else found anything else out about this James Bailey guy?
That fucking retard. I'm sorry, man. Sorry, I know retard isn't a politically correct term. Whatever, that moron, you know, taking your family's name and trying to, you know, troll people, you know, when he's some asshole that set up a ring twice for fucking Ian, you know what I mean? And then he's not a Bailey. He's not even honest about whether he lives in Illinois or Colorado, you know. I mean, I believe in freedom of speech, but you know what? I posted the news about IWA Mid-South closing on my Facebook wall. He comes on the thread and he tries to create a conversation. Well, Ian's not the only locker room where there's drugs. I'm like, look, dude, it doesn't belong in this thread. The fuck it doesn't, blah, blah. This goes on. This turns all the way into him, you know, going on the IWA Mid-South message boards, claiming I'm avoiding and sidestepping the hard questions and all that. It's my fucking wall, okay? I don't want to start a fucking... I didn't even want to start a thing to bash in, okay? I just simply put it up there so people can see this is what had taken place, okay? And I think that every one of us have a right to control what's on our fucking Facebook wall. And so this guy got into a personal issue, and he basically picked up the flag and wanted to go out and put himself over like he's some kind of crusader, you know, defending Ian.
I'd like to also add to the line someone else who I believe you're all very, very familiar with, and that's JC's father, Joe Bailey Sr.
Hey, Billy, Joseph, all y'all, how y'all doing?
Hey, Dad.
Doing all right. Hey, Pops. Brother.
Hey, look, man, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know who's trying to throw. I missed out on part of this because I missed out when I should have called in, shouldn't have called in, but let me tell you something. Billy don't need to be threw under no bus. I've been around in the business. I started out myself back in the 80s with Eddie Martin, Bill Dundee, and I and Todd Morton. We run up down the road, run shows in Kentucky, Indiana, Tennessee, Danny Davis, all those guys, we was running up down the road. So, you know, I've been around the business for a minute. You know, I kind of blame myself for my son even getting involved and what he got involved in. I kind of lose track, man, because this pain I'm feeling, man, it's so real. I lost my son. But John Williams, Ian Rotten, whatever you want to call him, he made his own track record. He's the guy that's beat people out of money. He's the guy that's ripped people off on rent money. He's the guy that's put kids into the ring that didn't need to be in the ring, beat the shit out of them, took their training money. He's the guy it's went on and on and on and on. And, you know, Ian and I have had our differences. Back in the late 90s, when I was running the BBW, you know, he wanted to dog the BBW, put me down, and like a man, I've always stood up to his face. I've never run hid, never done anything without anybody knowing it. that's when Ian and I started our feud. I got his King of Death matches shut down. Well, somewhere along the line, JC decided that he wanted to go up and wrestle for him. So I'm going to give the devil his dues. JC liked hardcore wrestling. He helped put JC on the map with that because my son was good at doing that, even though I've always spoke out against it. But JC carried his own self after he went to Combat Zone and these other places. See, they let all them go and JC stayed because he carried his own weight. I didn't ever support JC doing that shit. I support JC wrestling because he was my son, because I knew he loved to do it. So, you know, there's a whole lot of things I don't even know if I'm even making any sense. I don't blame, there's a lot of things I don't blame men for, but there's a lot of things I do blame men for. And just to get around all that, you know, when JC died last August, when we had him laid out at the funeral home here in Bardstown, Ian showed up at the funeral. My ex-wife, JC's mother, who also 10 weeks after JC passed away, she laid down and died with her broken heart over JC's death, didn't want him there. But I spoke up and said, look, Vicky, you know, Ian's not the only guy that swung a chair that hit JC in the head. Ian's not the only one that had JC take a crazy bump. Just let the man pay his respects, let him go. Well, so what does he do? Let him pay his respects, you know, and my mind's not really fixated because I can't really tell you a whole lot about what went on at the funeral, because I'm telling you something, you do not want to walk in my shoes. You do not want to walk in my shoes. It is horrible. It is awful. But in the process, Ian sat back there, and now Ian's admitted this on radio in a roundabout way, you know, he's put a couple twists and a couple turns on it that, well, if JC was still here, he would have been back here eating pills or smoking dope with us. And then I've had a couple people say, well, you know, one thing or another. Then I got people come back out of the past and tell me, you know, well, Ian gave JC 60 pills of this. And then Ian admits on a radio station last week that he gave or sold JC drugs. Now, folks, let me tell you something. It don't make no difference if it's a newborn. It doesn't make no difference if it's a year old. It don't make no difference if it's a 27-year-old like my son was or a 58-year-old like mine. You are someone else's child. That child is your child. And if I, trust us, this is what I want everybody to know, especially when you ring up about this James Bailey. That punk ain't no kin to the Baileys. He wants to make a comment if J.C. made his decisions. Just J.C. made his decisions. If J.C. took the pills that Ian gave him, made him, yes. But I'm going to tell you, and by me not blaming Ian directly for causing J.C.'s death, if I thought that Ian was directly responsible for killing J.C., you know what? He'd be gone too. But as last July... But last July, JC called me before and was upset. Is everybody else still listening to me?
No, yep. Absolutely.
Okay. Last July, before JC passed away, he called me crying mad. He said, Dad, you can't believe this. You can't believe this. This son of a bitch did this to Mickey. He did this to Mickey. He's banged me. You know, he's screwed on me. I'm going to try to be polite because I don't want to be out of line on your radio show, but he's dumped on me, he's dumped on me, he's dumped on me.
Say
he said, Dad,
want,
he said, Dad, he said, let's shut this son of a bitch down. You get him. You can get him like nobody else can get him. I said, son, calm down. I said, let's get this worked out. I said, I'm going to call this motherfucker on the phone, and I'm going to get shit straight with him. See, because I'm a man. I go straight to you fucking ass. I don't go behind your back. I went and called him up on the phone. I said, hey, Ian, look, this is Joe. I'm a motherfucking disabled vet. I don't run professional wrestling shows no more. I've been fucking shot. I shot motherfuckers. You fuck with my kid again, motherfucker, I'm going to shut you down. Now, you leave JC the fuck alone, and I won't bother you. He's a grown man, but you leave him the fuck alone. Okay, then what happens? This motherfucker, I allow him to come to my son's funeral. Then he talks his shit back there. Then I find out he's I knew he fucked my kid. Gave him $60 for the King of Death 2010. $60 and a handful of pills. Then this motherfucker, I find this out. Then he goes out in the parking lot after he leaves, and he's sitting out here whining, and my ex-sister-in-law has to give this motherfucker $25 for gas to get the fuck out of the goddamn parking lot. And
all he was doing the whole time he was there was trying to be sociable and just talk to everybody else. He wasn't there to put his pay his respect to JT.
Listen, let me, in other words, if I'm not mistaken,
he treated it like a fucking networking opportunity.
A networking opportunity. Yeah. Let me finish blowing this off my chest, man, because, my woman's mad at me because she knows it makes my sugar bad, my blood pressure bad. You know, I've tried to walk away from this and tried to walk away from this. I had a couple guys that was involved. Said after I made a fucking couple cold phone calls and got that Clarksville show shut down. And they said, Joe, you know, look, we're trying to get this together, that together, some guys get some work, do this or that. Can you back off? Can you back off a little bit? So, you know, I said, well, okay, for you guys, because, you know, y'all been good to JC, you know, I'll do this and I'll do that. Well, then what happens? This guy Jerry out of North Carolina's got one of these talk shows. He calls me up. Joe Wins, blah, 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 blah. You know how many times I got to tell him to quit talking about my kid, get my name, my family name out of his mouth? So you know what? If the IWA is shut down, that Ian shut it down. Ian's got his own track record. He did what he ever wanted to do. And some of the guys that's standing up that said they were JC's friends and supported JC have been shit on and screwed just like Ian has, and they wouldn't have their position or their pecking order in the wrestling business where they're at right now if it hadn't been for JC dragging down the combat zone with him. Now, you count all of them that you want to out of the Indianapolis area and take them up there. I ain't wanting to piss nobody off, but JC took them up there. They are up there because JC took them. Not because DJ Hyde or what's the other guy you used to run a Billy? What's the other boy's name?
Zandy.
He ain't come down to Indianapolis getting all those guys. JC took them up there because he was his buddies. JC done busted his ass, had the shit beat out of him time after time after time. How many guys would really like getting in the ring and rock and roll week after week with a necro butcher? Come on. Work or no work, I'm going to tell you what, that's a job. That's a job. You know, he packed them people up there on his back. So you know what? I'm going to try not to get excited because my girl's mad at me because I do it, and it's not good for my health. John Williams was throughout of Kentucky. He's been throughout of Illinois. He's been throughout of Indiana and several places. He stopped all the wrestling and all these National Guard armories. I know of a boy that took out a $20,000 mortgage. He done took it before I knew it and gave Ian money back in 99 or 2000, King of Death, and he thought he'd really done something. That kid lost his home. Pony Boy used to do tattoos. He had a son that got killed or died from a medical treatment or something. Cubana had to pay a big lawsuit. Guess who spent a lot of that money? Ian Stinking Rotten. You know, the list goes on. You know how many kids I've seen nowhere at his school that he'd bring them in there and he put them in chop class, have corporal, cash flow, this one, that one there, in a chop class, beat these kids till they had blood running out of their freaking chest and they just quit and leave, and Ian laugh about it, put the $500 in his pocket. I run shows for him out here at Barstown, put 800 people in a building out here. The fire department come in and was going to shut the National Guard Army down because it was too crowded. We raised the doors, opened the doors so people could watch. You know what? Madman Pondo wrestled that night. Ox Harley and several of these other guys. I'm talking about we had a gate from hell, and he gave these guys $20-some dollars apiece. He's going to put air conditioning in. He's going to get headstones for people. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. John Williams has done what he says to done what he's done to himself. But there has people that has archived and remember. And that's, I'm going to tell y'all something, folks. I don't know him, and I don't know if y'all know him. But that boy down there in North Carolina, that Jerry Wiseman, I'm going to tell you something. He's on Ian Rotten's ass like white on rice, and so he's a dead man walking whenever he tries to run a show because that boy's going to be on top of him. He's in line. I sprinkle the holy water. That's what they call Joe Bailey does. I sprinkle the holy water on that cult to try to get rid of him. This boy has got a damn water hose like off of a tanker, off of a damn fire truck spraying on his ass. Anybody got a question for me?
Yeah, no, I want to say something just for you to kind of reiterate something you said, and I'm not trying to put myself over, but understanding my situation, anybody listening right now, so this goes to anybody, I guess, in the business, I've got Joe JC's dad, I got Joe JC's brother, so I just want you to say one more time that, you know, people in the business that are accusing me of dragging JC's name through the mud, accusing me of doing something wrong. I just want you to make it clear to them that I've been on the side of JC's family, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because
the only one that's brought this shit to light for me. The only one I've seen that, I mean, I've had a bunch of guys friend me on there, but you're the only one I've seen out there actually promoting his name in a good way.
Let me tell you something. Back in the day when I first met you back up, well, I knew you was already working with JC, but you and I talked on the phone, but then when you and I met up in Indianapolis last year, I asked you to keep an eye on my son, to look out for him, take care of him. You did an excellent job of that. You was always on top of it. You called me. Because I'm a worried father. My son was a crazy. My kid did some crazy shit. And I knew that I could pick up a phone, and I called Billy Graham, make sure he was all right. I checked Billy Graham, make sure my boy hadn't been doing no shit they shouldn't have been doing, because JC wasn't no saint. But I could make sure that JC wasn't doing anything. And you know what, brother? Since he died, from all the guys up there and all the guys he worked with, you're the only guy that calls me or calls and checks with my family on a regular basis. And what I mean regular is just like, you know, a couple, three times a week, checking with them on Facebook, checking with them here and there to see how we're doing. See, because what we're doing right now with the loss of JC, it's forever. This ain't a work. This is not a somebody losing a payday. I lost my son. That shit is awful. That is forever. Forever. I felt so bad that I haven't, and I'm going to tell you something. This year, me shutting him down, it gets my blood going. I might have enough about me that I'll be able to get in my car and drive to Madison and see my son that's on the line with us also. I've been so depressed I can't get up and I can't go nowhere. Because I'm living and what I'm doing is real.
It's real. No. The bottom line for me is this, so that while people are saying JC would have wanted this or JC wouldn't have wanted that, I'm going to ask you guys outright, knowing what has really went on, I want you guys to say it, not me. How do you think JC would feel about the people in the locker room that are his friends supposedly that are now going to try and run me out of the business? What do you think JC would have felt about that?
Hey, JC would have said it's bullshit. JC knew. All the boys in the business, you don't believe me, you go watch JC's shoot interview from last year when he done it. Smart Mark did a shoot interview. He talked about the hate I had for Ian on there. He talked about what his daddy thought about the business, about the all the bullshit, the pills, the dope, any of it. You know, he knew in July. I called Ian Rotman in July and told him to leave my son alone. Last July, right a couple weeks before JC died. So it's not no big secret. JC wanted me to deal him under. And you know what? If I was going after Ian and JC was in this locker room somewhere or another, you know, Dad's going to do what he wants to do. I'm my own man. That's my kid I lost, and ain't nobody going to tell me how to deal with this shit the way I want to. If Ian Rotman hadn't run his mouth at the funeral home, if Ian Rotten hadn't publicly come out on a radio station and admitted to selling dope to my boy, then there's a couple things right there that he'd been safe for me on. But see, he admitted that, so I'm going to do what I want to do. And to that James Bailey, if you out there listening, trust me, believe this. If I knew Ian Rotten would have gave dope to my boy, regardless, I would have took care of business. And I'm not done yet. And
yeah,
I'm not done where
everybody
I'm going.
Online
wants
to talk this, so, Mac, talk this, Mac. I'm close enough. I can go down and take care of Ian my fucking self. Like I said, I'm on. If he sees me, he'll remember me, but he won't think about not opening that door. I can walk up to his front steps and stomp his fucking fat ass and not think twice about it. I'm not 500 miles away. I am JC's brother. I'm 6'3", 300 fucking pounds. I'll put a hurting on that man and nobody's getting a payday.
Yeah.
Well, the truth of the matter is it's not Billy's fault. Well, first of all, Billy has been a true friend to JC, and I can say he's been standing cold-hearted right there that I could say that JC, that he's JC's true friend. And JC would not appreciate nobody dogging Billy for what Billy's done, because Billy's been here. I got two girls up here. It's hurting. My daughter and my granddaughter, they living in pain. I'm living in pain. Billy's been a real friend to the Baileys. What Ian Rotten, John Williams, whatever you want to call him, has done to the IWA Mid-South, he has done to himself. And everybody out here that's criticizing or worrying about a payday, I know somebody ought to get smartened up and go out here and run a decent business. If, If I wanted to go out here and do it again, I'd go out here and run a decent business. There's enough of these boys out here to be treated right, not getting screwed on, shit on. There's plenty of people out here. I don't know why nobody wants to go back and work for Ian Rotten and worry about him giving me a shit. Can you imagine J.C. worked him, Balls Mahoney, and who else in this king of death? You got $60 and a handful of pills. $60 and a handful. But see, J.C.'s not the only one. I'm not going to call nobody else out was working. He screwed a whole bunch of people. All these people's got to do is go online, open their eyes up. Hey, and he's not going to lose $1,000.
He lost that ropes and had Bull just beat the dog shit out of him. Bull didn't even know why. He just did it just because Ian told him to.
You know, there's been guys, you know, he's had kids beat the shit out of and everything else. And you know what? It's the truth. It's all the truth. If it wasn't,
so I'm talking
the
about
truth,
the one where you had to go and handcuff the guy from the rope down there on Winn-Dixie. That flash.
You're talking about what's that big heavy set guy you threw this stuff for over? No. Well, Ray's the guy he ripped off, but what's this other big heavy set guy that that did this stuff for Ohio Valley down there? Kenny Boland. I asked Kenny Boland, I had to get him out of the building. Ian done had to sit up, he's gonna have his brains beat out down there one night. And I said, Ian, I ain't standing for this. I went to Kenny, you know. Anybody could confront Kenny and ask him if I didn't save his butt down there at the OIWA arena over that. You know, he shot on a blue million and one people. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but I'm sure there's other people out here who want to call in and ask the host or Billy Graham something. Billy, I appreciate your friendship.
Yeah, but,
before
you get off, Joe, I just want to give my deepest condolences to you. Me as a fan, yeah, I've felt the pain, and I know it's nothing even close to compared to what it is to the family. And I can't say enough, you know, give my deepest condolences for this. You know, for you guys, I mean, your son was an unbelievable athlete. He did nothing but give us 100%, and I appreciate that so much. We always, you know, wish that things didn't go down the way it was, and I'm glad you're able to speak your mind and really tell everybody how, you know, people did him wrong.
And Joe,
well, there's a thing you need to tell everybody. Ian's had a whole – you remember old Jim Jones, the guy that went down there in the jungle, the cult leader? You know, I'm going to tell you something. Ian has had a whole lot of people drink this juice, and J.C. was one of them that drank this juice. And no matter how much I talked to him, I couldn't get him to stop until last July. He called me on the phone crying mad after he had found out that the shit that Ian had done to Mickey. J.C., it was – J.C. took it as gospel, what he's done. He knew Ian. And you know, finally he's saying to himself, you know, this guy's been shitting on me for the last 10 years. You know, when's somebody going to wake up? Dad's tried to point this out. You know, but there's a lot of people out here who drank that juice. And, you know, they're out here. I don't know how he does it, but he does have that ability to fix that juice and get people to drink it. But there's enough people that's getting tired of it. And, you know, and it's just, you know, the disrespect, and you know, no other kid needs to have the shit beat out of him. Nobody else needs to be stolen from. No other mark needs to be having money taken from. You know, and I hear people talking about, you know, Ian did run some good shows. Ian's had some good talent in there. But at the same breath, when people are saying that, the thing of it is people are not remembering it was some mark that paid for that. You know, Jim Fannin, look at him. That's one of the biggest marks Ian Rotten ever had in his pocket. And Jim Fannin will run and act like he's a promoter. Well, I'm going to tell you what, if I go out and run a wrestling show and I got a guy that's got a couple $100,000 to spend, yeah, I'll tell him he's a promoter as long as he's handing me $1,000, $2,000 a day. Let me pick out who I want to bring in, fly in, not fly in. You think about it, when Ian ain't had that money marks with him, how many plane cancellations, how many this, how many that? Where's this mark been? That mark ain't been here with him. So he's been out here using backyarders working his shows. You know, he robbed all these guys up there at the King of Death. I bet there probably ain't but a handful of them that he paid right. And, you know, I'm not going to bring them out, call them out by name because it's not my business. If they want to call in and tell somebody Ian ripped them off, that's their business. But Ian Rotten admitted that he sold my kid pills. He said my kid owed him money. You know, that's between him and J.C. I don't believe he did. J.C. told me he didn't owe it to him. So I know he robbed J.C. I know J.C. killed himself for him. So what little bit of money that J.C. made from him, J.C. made a drop in the bucket from him. And Ian is still out here making money off J.C.'s back. IWA videos, every time one of them sells and my son's on it, and he gets a quarter off of it. That's a quarter he shouldn't get if my son's on it. So, you know, I appreciate all the love everybody showed my son. And, son, I love you. I'll call you later, Billy. I'll talk to you. And the host, again, thank you for allowing me to express myself.
Joe, thank you so much for taking my back, guys, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. If I can throw something else out there and you guys want to Facebook me, that's cool. I'd like somebody to send me Ian's home address. Because, like I said before, I'm not 500, 600 miles away. He does know what I look like. I just don't know where he lives. I don't know how to contact him. I know none of this. All I know is all the smack he's talking about my little brother. I've got a Gerson I need to take out. And like I said, hell, if somebody wants, I'll bring his fucking cell phone so somebody can video camera. Or video tape.
I hear you, Joe, don't take yourself down on account of him.
Oh, no, brother. It's $50 to get out of jail in the state of Indiana for assault and battery. And he doesn't know where I live, so how in the hell is he going to be able to come after me? But it'll just be self-vindication.
I love both you guys. I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you both tomorrow.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I bet you got somebody else waiting already.
Yes, I do. I'd like to welcome to the show at this point, Tank.
What's up, fellas? Billy Graham, how you doing, brother?
Yo, call fiction to the death. Anybody doesn't know it, man, Tank is another CF brother, Cult Fiction all the way, man.
So what's going on, Tank? We wanted to bring you on, let you speak your mind on everything that's going on, and what you got for us?
I was going to say something real quick before Tank started, because I know that...
Okay.
What I can put out there is that, you know, obviously Tank and I are good friends, and yes, another Cult Fiction member, as I shamelessly plugged him, there we go. But I know that we spoke in the last week, and, you know, I know that Tank had specifically, you know, heard, you know, when Mike Levy was on with us last week, and
right.
You know, everybody in the world knows that Tank was involved in that situation, so I guess what I'm trying to do is just kind of give an introduction for him, because I know that he's had to, you know, bear, you know, going on 3 years now of the fallout from what occurred there, and I know that he's, you know, got a lot that he's been carrying on his shoulders about that, and that was why he expressed an interest in being able to come out here and clear the air, you know what I mean? And that's what I have to say. You know?
By all means.
All right, man, yeah, that whole Mike Levy shit was just like, I was doing a gimmick at the time where I was just like, you know, running out and curb stomping people. Now, curb stomping refs, the fucking janitors, it didn't matter. So he had his little match with Mickey, and they were beating the piss out of each other. And I went to Ian, and I was like, after the match, let me go out and curb stomp him. He goes, oh, yeah, that'd be great. So here I go. Match is over. I'm going to run in, and I tell him. I'm like, all right, dude, turn your head, curb stomp. And I lift him up, and goddamn Devin Moore comes off the top rope. I'm like, what the fuck? So I was like, well, shit. So my fat ass climbs up to the second rope, and I come off, and, you know, and it's brutal as shit. And every time I see it, I just cringe, like, man, this is a fucking shit. And, you know, and I was trying to, I mean, what happened afterwards, I had nothing, I don't know if they had that shit planned out, but, like, my little part was just called on the spot. You know, I was all like, I'm going to go out, I'm going to curb stomp this guy, yada, 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 get a pop out of it. And then I did come off the second rope, you know, if I hurt that dude, you know, and I apologized to him that night, that day, that night. I even hung out with him. He's all, hey, man, everything's cool. But the beatdown that he got after all of that happened was complete horseshit. You know, and I've had people, like, on the CZW fan be all like, well, you're such a badass, and if you wasn't for all that, why didn't you stop it? Okay, I'm a pretty tough son of a bitch, but there were still, you know, 10 to 12 guys out there. I couldn't fight them all off, you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And I think what you're saying, I mean, it just goes to lend to what I was saying last week and what I expressed to Mike from way back when. I mean, I went out in front of the whole world, all over the internet, and made a complete jackass out of myself, something I'll never live down for the rest of my life, because I think what you're saying is just like me and just like everybody else. I mean, we're all fucking confused about what was real and what fucking wasn't, man. And I mean, I had no idea. How are we going to know that, you know, what Mike told last week, that he went in the ring and then somebody's not even doing anything of the match that they work out together, and, you know, And you know, all I knew was Ian coming and outright inciting people, you know, saying, look, that fucking kid, he's potatoing her, he's stiffing her, he's fucking beating the shit out of her, well, fuck that. We're not going to let somebody come in here and beat her up. You know, like, he was working everyone like it was Mike that was shooting on her, you know, and that's, I mean, I'm glad I didn't lay a hand on him, but, like, I'm not above it. I mean, it could have been me instead of John Calvin with that fucking kendo stick, you know, whacking on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But I just was that confused. So in defense of what Tank's saying, I mean, for anybody that thinks you should just start fighting back, I mean, and then the whole history of the past of the company, yeah, I mean, you got to look over your shoulder like you don't even know if the guy that's supposed to be your brother is actually really your brother or whether he's going to turn on you. And so, certainly it makes me feel better to hear Tank say, well, I don't know if I could have done something, because if Tank couldn't do anything, my skinny ass sure couldn't do anything.
I mean, yeah. And honestly, God, got to the part, you know, to the point where I was like, okay, this shit has gotten way out of control. And if I try to stop it, you know, I don't want to have to fight off 10 or 12 guys. And I know I probably could have taken, you know, two or three of them out, but then there's the other seven or eight that's going to wet my ass.
Yeah.
For my $100, whatever the hell I was going to get.
I'll tell you what.
Sure the hell wasn't worth it.
If I could change anything other than making none of it ever happen that day, I wish something would have flipped to where maybe that did happen, because I'll tell you what, it wouldn't have been all one-sided, because I can tell you that Toby and Deranged and myself and you, and I would imagine, I think there's a couple other people that were standing there. I know that the big brother, Uncle Sabu there, I know he wasn't thrilled about what was going on, because I was there with him. I know CJ Otis was not pleased about what's going on. Very obviously, Dustin Lee was not pleased about what was going on. So, shit, maybe it could have instead just turned into a gang fight. It would have been better for Mike. You know, maybe the rest of us, for the rest of our life, wouldn't have to have the stigma of, you know, that we knowingly participated in a fucking criminal act against somebody who couldn't fight back, you know. And you know, this is why, you know, when you talk about the shit on the boards and stuff like that and people couldn't understand, it's like, see, I know Tank. You know, Tank was brothers with my brothers for a long time, and you know, and then, you know, the whole idea of him becoming part of our crew and everything like that as a work, I mean, once again, goes to the basis of, we don't just let anybody get written into Cult Fiction. It's just not that way. It's another reason I have a hard time in the business, because if you tell me, hey, I want this guy, and it's like, well, no, because there's got to be a certain kind of personality and brotherhood. And I mean, Tank, bottom line is, I'm not trying to kill your business, brother, but anybody that doesn't know Tank personally, man, I mean, Tank, like most of my friends in Cult Fiction, scariest motherfuckers in the world when they're out there around that ring, but in real life, the biggest sweetheart. I mean, I don't know, man, you take the Range, brain damage, fucking one-time Necro, Toby, you know, Masada, Tank, freak show, all of them, man, and it's like, probably, I'm probably the biggest asshole out of the bunch. I mean, I'm probably in real life the scariest one. I don't mean like I can beat everybody up, but as far as being a peace loving kind, gentle spirit, I would put all those guys above me. And so just thinking that he did something just with malicious intent and that was all that was going on, I'm just, that's why I always stood up for Tank and said, no, man, you don't know him, and that's not what was going on. And I was aware of him checking on Mike and making, you know, trying to, and we've talked many times in the years since, and I know how bad he's felt, you know, so that's why I could defend him, because I know better, I know what kind of person he is, I know what kind of man he is, he's got kids of his own, man, so I'm glad you came on to try to, because I guess another thing about what I was saying earlier about kind of taking this in a different direction now. I mean, I go back to what Kickboxer was saying last week, and I go to who I really am as a person. And so, I mean, I hope Mike's listening right now. I mean, I can't make him, you know, last week you heard me kind of like put it out there for him that could you maybe find it in yourself to maybe forgive Mickey? And he said no, you know, but,
yeah.
And that's his decision, you know what I mean? And he's the one that took the beating, you know what I mean? But he's been pretty gracious
yeah.
toward most of us, and I guess that's what I'm saying, is part of what I was trying to facilitate tonight with Tank calling and whatever is not just to clear the air, but I don't want to be a destroyer of the business. I want to kind of like help in a healing process here, you know what I mean? So I think that Tank coming at me tonight and talking about this, it's not to run Ian further down. It's not to rub somebody's face in shit. But, I mean, we've got to get past all this stuff. We've got to make sure these things don't happen in the future, and we've got to come to some kind of, you know, if I don't want Mike Levy to walk around for the rest of his life angry and hurting from this, man. You know, I want him to be able to heal as a person, and that goes back to what Frank was saying about turning a negative into a positive and me showing my true face. And you know, like, Tank's a good guy, people, and that's just the fucking truth, you know? So,
absolutely.
You know, one thing about, you know, Mickey beating the shit out of him and him hitting her back, is like, she's been in the ring with me and Toby and Brain Damage and Necro, and we've hit that bitch harder than anybody.
Yeah.
Like, everything was cool. So with this dude, you know, that's why I'm thinking, I mean, I wasn't a part of some big plan to beat the shit out of this kid. What I did was fucking wrong, but I didn't think what I was going to, you know, go out and do was going to lead into a gang beatdown, you know what I'm saying? So if they had something behind closed doors, I had nothing to do with that.
All right. Here's my thing, you know, as a fan, the way I see it is, you know, he wasn't in the circle, so as soon as he got a little more, you know, stiff or didn't sell as much as they wanted, they decided, yeah, send the crew out, but let's use this as an example. Now, if in 01, when Ian beat the shit out of Peter B. Beautiful, if that guy had a bunch of people in the locker room on his side and just said, call in the troops, this guy's stiffing me, what would have happened to Ian that day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I have no idea.
But the bottom line is, of course, you know, Peter B. Beautiful, Mike Levy, and anybody else that you're going to mention in that light, I mean, has never been the one in that position because they're not the one running the company. They're not the one. And, I mean, you can equate it with, you know, passing out this mysterious, invisible, metaphoric Kool-Aid to just, you know, gratitude from people, people that are gratitude to get a break. I mean, it's really, really hard in the business, you know, in a one-and-a-half-party system, you know, to get any kind of break when you're not a freaking steroid monster who's got a cover boy face and you know, the death of the strong regional promotions. I mean, so it's so hard to get there, and certainly IWA, I mean, you've got IWA Mid-South, you've got the various offshoots of IWA, you've got CZW, maybe ROH, you know, today we've got Dragon Gate, Force One, Jersey All-Pro, but I mean, bottom line is, there's not a lot of places to go, and so I think a lot of that Kool-Aid has to do with people being really grateful to get the chance to have that platform, to have that stage, to be on the Smart Mark videos, to have fans all over the world, you know, become aware of them. And so, you know, I think the gratitude for having that opportunity, I think that people have gotten a little bit carried away in what the responsibility is in showing your gratitude for that. Because, I mean, let's face it, if you didn't have the talent, I mean, I take some of these guys that want to say, well, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have done nothing. Well, geez, man, believe a little bit in yourself, man, because I think you would have done it no matter what because of you, man, because of your talent. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, so many of these promoters are no different than the pimp. I mean, if the pimp doesn't have any pussy to pedal, you know, he ain't getting a car. You know what I mean? So, you know, the ass is what makes the pimp have his power. You know what I mean? Not vice versa. So, I think there's a little bit too much gratitude toward the fucking pimp, and it doesn't have to be that way, you know. It could be people being treated with respect. It could be not fostering this gang mentality, not, you know, fostering everybody being out for themselves, you know. Because let's face it, for every one thing that we've exposed here. And I don't mean about Ian. I mean about things that go on in the business. For every one thing that's been exposed, I mean, there's another 1,000 fucking things that we've all seen that we know is bullshit. And, you know, we're kind of all, like, helpless, man, because, you know, we're not – now it's really easy to say, well, then you should just quit. Well, you know, that's all good to say when you're not somebody that's went and trained and taken the bumps and beat your ass and had a dream and had an ambition, you know, like – you know, some of these people that are saying those things, you know, they're not being asked why they work for a corporation that's, you know, destroying the earth or, you know, polluting our rivers or, you know, peddling some other kind of shit, whether it's caffeine or soda pop. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right,
okay for them to go home and, you know, buy their house and pay for their fancy car on that and not care who they're victimizing. But, of course, we're all held to task. Well, you know, you're just as guilty because you should – if you weren't guilty, then you wouldn't be on the wrestling show. Well, fuck you, man. You know, like, we love this shit, okay? And you know?
And then, can I chime in about Ian? I mean,
yeah.
Seems like, you know, everybody is bashing Ian Rotten. And, you know, I might get heat for saying this, but Ian Rotten was always good to me. I worked for him from 2004 to 2009. And he never once shorted me a damn dime. He shorted me one time. He made up for it the very next show. And, you know, I know the stories of him screwing a lot of people out on money. But
yeah.
He never screwed me, so I can't come on here and just bash the shit out of him. What he did, you know, what happened to Mickey, I don't know what happened. You know, I moved back to Tennessee, and after that I kind of just got out of the loop of IWA and just started working the Southern shows again, you know, trying to really get out of this Mike Levy bullshit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
Man, talk about Mike Levy. I'm like, fuck. I mean, I would go to shows, I mean, in Florida and Alabama, they'd be like, let's talk about Mike Levy. I was like, let's fucking don't. You know, I won't talk any more about it.
Yeah, well, I thank you for coming on and, you know, clearing the air on, you know, the whole subject.
Oh, man, no problem. Like,
yeah,
Ian, he never once screwed me on my money. He was always good to me. I think he was more scared of my wife than anything because she always, you know, cussed him out for not getting a hotel room or some shit. Yeah, it was always good to have her around. She'd be all like, all right, Ian, we need a fucking hotel. He'd be all like, okay, you know, shoot her $50. It was good to have her around. But, you know, the whole...
Maybe she should have been the one running things.
Yeah, shit. You know, and I have, you know, much respect. I mean, I never had a problem with Patty or Fannin or none of those guys, and they always treated me good. But there were times when I would stay in the same hotel room with Freak Show and Lane, and they'd be talking about their payoffs being this, and then I was getting, you know, something double, maybe triple what the hell they were getting.
Wow.
And I always just kept my mouth shut. You know, that's one thing. You know, in the business, you don't go around saying, well, man, I got this. And then the other bullers are going to be like, fuck you, I did just as much as you did, and I got $15. You know, and I was just like, holy shit. So, you know, I always just kept it on, you know, didn't talk a whole lot about what I got paid. But, you know, Ian was cool with me, you know, and the threatening Billy and all that, you know, that was... I heard about all that shit, and you know, I just can't bash the man for treating me like shit because he never did.
But
you were going to say about...
Bullpen told me, Bullpen goes, the reason why you got your money is because he was fucking scared you'd beat his ass. I'm like, goddamn,
right.
Bull, he's fucked you for years. Right? You know, you're tougher than me. you're Bullpen.
So, brother, let me ask you just outright for everybody. I mean, do you think I'm wrong for being honest? I mean,
oh no.
Okay.
No. I mean, the beef with y'all, you know, airing it up, that's great. But I just can't jump on that bandwagon and damn him to hell because he didn't treat me like shit. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I would, and I'm not asking you to, and I wouldn't expect you to. Like I said, I don't want to run the guy into the shit just to do it. That's never been my intent, you know. So, but I think you got another. I'm getting a Facebook message here. You got somebody else waiting on the line, man.
Yes, I do. This time,
thanks, man. Thank you, brother, man.
Oh man, no problem. Thanks for having me on,
guys. Thanks for coming on, Tank.
Thanks, buddy.
At this time, I'd like to welcome to the show someone who might not be as generous towards Ian Rotten, and that is Peter B. Beautiful.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey, what's going
what's
on,
up,
man?
Peter?
Sorry to keep you waiting.
That's
what's
okay.
Up, Peter?
It was entertaining, and I heard my name get dropped, so that's always good. So.
Yes, sir. So maybe you'd like to recap your experience with Mr. Ian Rotten.
Well, let's start from the top.
I was a huge fan of ECW. I loved the Ian and Axel feud. That's what made me want to become a wrestler. That stuff. I wanted to be a deathmatch wrestler watching that. I had the utmost respect in the world for Ian Rotten. I ended up moving to Wisconsin. I'm originally from Michigan. And working for a guy named Carmine Despirito doing a deathmatch tournament. And Ian Rotten was there, and he was a huge asshole to me the first day. There was a lumberjack strap match where he just beat the shit out of me, and I wasn't even involved in the match.
That wasn't the MAW tournament, right?
Yeah, it was the MAW tournament.
Oh, that was the MAW.
Yep. Oh.
Okay.
And then I worked Leatherface, who was Harley Lewis under a hood, and he beat the shit out of me. I was 21 years old, 22 years old, dumb green, needed some money to pay my bills, so take whatever I got. I didn't know better to fight back, so I got the shit kicked out of me, whatever. Ian comes to me the next day, tells me, you're one of the toughest motherfuckers I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, whatever. Cool. Me and Ian, I thought we were cool. So then I'm online a few weeks later, and my friend, who was a referee at the time named Craig Smith, messages me on Yahoo or AOL or something, goes, hey, you're in the King of Deathmatch tournament. I'm like, well, I didn't fucking hear about it. So I look online, and there's my name. I look by the message board. So I track down some people that have Ian's number, end up talking to him. We end up working out our payday for the 12-hour trip to Louisville, Kentucky, or Charlestown, Indiana, same fucking thing. Go down there. He's very nice to me while we're there. I ask him what we're going to do. He tells me. I actually call the finish of the match, and then we go to the ring, and he proceeds to beat the shit out of me. There's one thing. I mean, it's not...
Now, what year was it?
2001.
Really?
Now, if you go back and watch the tape, people say he shot on me, he kicked the shit out of me, whatever. If you go back and watch the tape, you can actually see me calling the spots. When I take the big chair shots at the end, I turn and I nod to him, tell him I'm ready for him. Now, I wasn't expecting the 5 chair shots in the ground later that broke my eardrum and gave me a level 4 concussion. But there was a big chair shot at the end that was supposed to be the finish. I did call. Now, after the match, Will Payne, who we all know and love, pulled me aside and goes, kid, I got a shotgun in my truck if you want it. That was a bunch of bullshit. And
that's unbelievable.
But the thing is, I knew what I was getting into. I know Ian was going to beat my ass. I mean, and unlike a lot of people can say, Ian actually paid me more than I was promised that day. So, I mean, but let's fast forward a couple years. He calls me up to book me for a double death tournament, one of those tag team, I don't remember what year it was, a couple years ago. And he offers me $50. And I'm like, that's fucking ridiculous, dude. I'm like, why don't you give me the same thing you gave me last time? It will be cool. He's like, I'll find someone else to do it cheaper. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I have friends that were actually my best friend, the best man in my wedding, just was working for Ian, and I heard the horror stories of both their paydays. He did the Prince of the Deathmatch tournament and made $10, or not got paid at all. And they were forced to sell tickets. They were forced to sell tickets. They were forced to set up the ring. All bullshit. Now, I'm not going to say who it is, but it was one of Ian's quote unquote top guys his last little run through Southern Illinois. There, I've heard a lot of stories. I just worked a couple shows with Mickey Knuckles. Hung out with her. Heard a lot of stories. Talked to Billy Graham quite a bit online. I'm not a fan of Ian Rotten. Or I shouldn't say that. I'm not a fan of John Williams.
All right.
I can still watch Ian Rotten match and say, hey, that guy used to be cool, but I'm not a fan of this person. I don't wish any harm on him or his family, but him as a person, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, so, I mean, for his statement that he made on a different radio show a little over a week ago that he's never taken liberties on anybody in the ring, you could easily vouch that that's a lie, right?
Yeah, I could definitely say that. He clotheslined me in the face.
Kicked you in the face. He did a lot of things that shouldn't happen. But.
Yeah. Well, I would say, Peter, when you just said about the chair shots that weren't planned,
that damaged your eardrum and everything, I would say that that would be, beyond a shadow of a doubt, a testament of taking liberties with somebody.
Oh yeah, I'm not gonna. Yeah, he definitely took liberties. Well, you know, after the King of the Deathmatch tournament, two nights later, I actually worked him again in Milwaukee.
The MAW match.
Right, which can be found on YouTube right now if anybody wants to look it up.
Right, which I just tried to show my co-host tonight and said, please listen, look at this fucking.
Can I, Peter, throw something in on that for a second, because it's just
sure.
In response to what I've seen people comment, even in the last week, as certain idiots like this guy disrespecting and stealing the Bailey name, who's not a Bailey, made these comments about you on their message board, was that, well, if he took liberties with him, that can't be true, because then why in the hell would he have worked that other match a couple days later? And maybe you can explain it. I think you just hit the nail on the head earlier when you said, well, you were too green to know
right.
that you could fight back or something. So go ahead. Yeah,
I was green as shit. I was maybe 2 or 3 years into the business. So I always wanted to be a deathmatch worker, and I figured this was my shot.
And looking up to Ian
right.
on top of it. You know.
Right, of course. And another thing is I was wrestling full-time as my job then. I wasn't going to miss a booking. If I missed a booking, I couldn't pay my rent. You know, I left that weekend with my two matches with Ian Rotten and another hardcore match in Marion, Indiana. My head was misshapen. I was bulging. I had two black eyes. I was beat to piss. Like, it was awful. I mean, I have friends to this day that talk about that was at that show in Milwaukee. It was...
Yeah, that's brutal. I just watched it again tonight while I tried to direct my co-host to it, and I mean, he hit you with every side of that chair that normal people don't hit people with. And
everybody talks about the Friday night match, the King of the Deathmatch match, which wasn't bad. I mean, it was rough. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to, but it was. Yeah, I also remember this shit was all 10 years ago.
Right.
I mean, it was rough, and I got hurt. I got hurt. I wasn't injured. I had a broken eardrum, but, you know, shit happens. And he took liberties. But the match Sunday night was way worse than anything that happened that Friday. I mean, he beat the shit out of me. And then when I got to the locker room, he's like, he threw my bag and made me change out in the hallway. Cause he told me I wasn't selling for him. Well, anybody knows in this business, if you're getting shot on, it's hard to fucking sell.
I don't know how that wasn't selling. I mean, when you get hit in the side of the head with a chair, and fuck, man.
But you looked like
you were fucking hurting. I think that's what selling is. I'm only
right.
a fan, but I don't know.
Right. Well, how
I can't
Billy?
Sell for shit. I can't sell for shit, period, so it doesn't matter
okay.
what it is.
But if someone legit punches you in the face, they're going to react a lot differently than someone's going to hit you with a little punch.
Absolutely, and you know, that's what Joe was talking earlier about Necro. I mean, I can't count the times. Now, listen, there's a difference between taking liberties with somebody with intent, I would think
right.
that we can agree, and the difference being that once in a while something happens, guys are guys, we're doing this physical thing, once in a while
right.
something goes wrong, somebody gets pissed off, somebody reacts to it. That
right.
aside,
oh, yeah.
That aside, and I don't think that's premeditation, so I don't think anybody holds a grudge over something like that. Shit happens sometimes. But, you know, Joe was talking about Necro, and I mean, right there you have it. I mean, Necro is praised constantly in the locker room for taking care of people and how, you know, that you know, those closest to the situation will think he really, really hurt somebody when he didn't. I mean, you're talking, I mean, you know, look, you take my brother there, brain damage. I mean, what's his signature thing? You know, that right cross of his, you know.
Punching people in the fucking face.
Yeah, you know, punching people in the fucking face. But I'll tell you, I mean, the bottom line is, as hard, as stiff, as many have voluntarily agreed to take from him, he still never unloaded at more than, you know, 1/10 power on anybody in this business, because if he did even let him go half power, they'd be dead. You know, and I've
There's a few people that have taken quite a few more stiff shots from him, but I had him tag me pretty decently once. I think there's only maybe 7-8 wrestlers that I've seen take one worse, and I had him lay one into me, but it as much as it looked like I was dead, and it really did fucking hurt, man. I mean, like, the bottom line is he didn't do anything that I wasn't expecting. He didn't do anything that I didn't want to take. He didn't do anything other than the way that I said, this, yeah, okay, hit me this hard, you know. So I think that, you know, there's a difference once again in somebody that, you know, they might be still doing something that's crazy to people outside of the business, people that aren't wrestlers, might be a little heavy, might be some really serious contact, but once again, not some guy just going out there and just doing whatever they want, punching the shit out of somebody. I mean, no matter what it looks like, you know, it's
oh, I totally agree with you. There's one thing of working stiff, working snug. Stiff, you're trying to fucking hurt somebody. I just worked at barbed wire matches a couple weeks ago with a guy who was known in IWA as the Dixieland Destroyer. And we beat the shit out of each other. But we went into the match knowing we were going to beat the shit out of each other.
Can I ask you a question? What name did he work under when you fought him?
I'm not going to break kayfabe on that one.
I tried to trick you. Sorry, wrestling fans, I tried to get you that scoop. You've all been debating it. Who is the Victory Destroyer? And I tried to sneak one in there, but it didn't work because Peter B. Beautiful was too slick for me. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Let's just say it's Hillbilly Jed.
Yeah.
It's not, but that's what everybody says, so.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, it's like we beat the shit out of each other.
I thought the Dixieland Destroyer was Billy Eady, the masked superstar, demolition axe. You know, that's who I thought he was. But
I was actually just on a show with him, and they have about the same build these days.
Yeah. well, that's why
yeah.
I thought it was him. You know, I figured just another alias. You know,
it could be Tracy Smothers.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Anyhow. Yeah, I mean, but like we were saying, there's one thing to go out there with the legitimate trying to hurt someone, another thing to go out there and hit each other so the crowd goes, well, these guys are beating the shit out of each other, but then you hug when you get to the back, you know?
Right.
Huh.
Yeah, and you know, unlike a lot of people in this business, I don't hate Ian Rotten. For lack of a better term, that match in 2001 got me a lot of fucking bookings. Ian Rotten beat my ass, made me famous, I guess.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, I mean,
to be honest
I've
with you, I would have never heard your name otherwise
right.
than that, and I could do nothing but feel bad for you and say, wow, this is a tough fucking dude.
Right.
You know?
Well, Ian Rotten, yeah, and you know what? Conversely, we wouldn't be friends either if it wasn't for him, so
right.
Thanks, Ian.
Yeah. I mean, I would love the opportunity, besides now the rumor of hepatitis C, to have another chance to work with Ian because
rumor.
You know, I feel like I have something to prove. You know, it's like this was a guy I looked up to. You know, one of the reasons I got in the business.
Well, if you can ever make that happen, since I'm not really, my schedule's kind of open these days. I don't know why, but if you need a manager, man, you know, I'm there. You know.
I've talked to people. I had one promoter book it, and then he wouldn't pay me my money, so I didn't show up. I don't know if Ian showed up, but you know, if any promoters are listening, we're in the 10-year anniversary of that match. Let's book a rematch. And
well,
I
man, Ian,
you know,
beautiful, awesome,
yeah.
Man.
And I guarantee the things that happened in 2001 would not happen again.
Nice. Toughness you displayed back then, you know, what has stopped you from going, like, to the highest level of deathmatch wrestling? I mean, you've took unbelievable beatings without, like, a stitch of offense. I mean, what stops you from taking, you know, the big spots that just puts you into that higher level of deathmatch wrestling?
Well, you know, the thing is, I got a lot of bad press after that from the deathmatch guys. They're like, oh, he wasn't selling, he doesn't know how to work. Well, of course I was selling it, getting the shit kicked out of me. But
I don't know. I'm married now with a kid. I mean, I don't necessarily want to do death. I don't want to do death matches every weekend. I mean,
I hear that.
But you know,
right.
PJ Hadley fitting. I am open for the Tournament of Death this year. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well,
holla
DJ. Holla DJ.
I think he just did. I just did. DJ Hyde,
okay.
just called Dysfunction. He has my number, so we're good.
Right.
Absolutely. So, yeah, man, that's...
If there's any promoters or fans looking to get in contact with me out there, you can find me on Facebook under my real name, Pete Sisco, S-I-S-C-H-O. I'm one of Billy Graham's friends. I'm not hard to find.
Yeah, easy. Look him up on my friend list somewhere there on my wall. You can find him, and... shit, man. It's cool you came on the show. Did you have any...
Yeah.
I mean, let me pick your head on something else. I mean, you know, you heard all this stuff in the last week. I mean...
Right.
Hear what I'm going
actually,
through now as a result of it. I mean... Well, what do you... You know, go ahead. I mean, what do you think?
I actually listened to the show, the original show with Jerry Wiseman, just going, oh, it's the Ian Rotten Radio Show. This is going to be a fucking train wreck. Not knowing what was going down.
Right.
And this was like the weekend right after I met Mickey Knuckles for the first time and heard a shit ton of stories. Me, her, and Dixieland Destroyer in a hotel room, smoking the gimmick, if you will. And
what's that?
Just here. ask the Iron Sheik, he'll tell you.
Yeah.
Just a ton of stories. So I'm listening to this thing, and it was a trip. Like, I didn't know the stuff with J.C. Bailey. I never met J.C. Bailey. You know, I'm sorry for anyone who did. I mean, his story's tragic. But then Ian Rotten coming on a national radio program saying, oh, I sold a guy with a drug problem drugs. Like, what the fuck were you thinking? You know?
Yeah,
it's a bad thing.
I wish... people would have got their point across better than yelling, screaming, and swearing, but I understand sometimes that's what you got to do. It was both you and Boltane. I don't understand why Boltane doesn't just get the money from Ian when he sees him on any of these ICP shows. I mean, obviously...
Because he doesn't... I'll tell you, I can answer that. I'll answer that one for Bull. I know he'll back me up on answering it for him. That the bottom line is that his employer's there, have basically told them, look, you know, this issue isn't in our business, and, you know, if he does something physical to confront Ian while on that show, then he's going to be costing himself a job. So,
no, I'm not saying physical.
I mean, there's a lot of people that think that, you know, once again, these people talking shit that don't know what they're talking about, that Bull's all hot air and that he's talking smoke. I'll tell you what, when I heard Bull Payne tell him, oh, don't worry, buddy, I'm going to get that money and I'm going to beat it out of your ass if I have to, they can say whatever they want on the internet, man. Like, I don't think that Ian's going to want to run into Bull away from the JCW locker room. You know what I mean?
Maybe they'll run into each other at Taco Bell.
Yeah, really. Bull will walk out with a lifetime supply of fucking Baja Steak Chalupas over that one, man. You know what I mean?
Right. But, I mean, no, I'm not saying Bull should go beat him up in the JCW locker room. I'm saying after paydays are handed out, Bull should be like, hey, where's my money?
Yeah.
You know, obviously I know you made this much. Give me half.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I agree to a certain extent, but you don't want to burn bridges in other places you're making money as well, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No, I definitely understand.
And I wasn't putting them down. JCW down for trying to run a business in a professional manner where this is not the kind of thing going on in the back, because this is certainly would be completely hypocritical when this was part of what, you know, part of the whole beef and the situation is with Ian. Why could we condone it just because we're on the other side of the fence? No, I would certainly hope that he would just... Now, his contention that he shouldn't have to give Bull a little extra after waiting a year for his money, I kind of see the need for interest myself. If it was my deal, I'd be expecting the same thing, because there ain't nobody in the world that just, yeah, well, I owe you $300 for a year, so I still only owe you $300. I mean, that's kind of not fair either, you know.
But
you know.
Well, you know, Ian's selling his ring. Maybe Bull will get his money.
Yeah, well.
And the popcorn machine.
And the pizza oven and the cooler, I'm
wondering myself if when everything is sold, when the pizza oven, the popcorn machine, the video library that
Thumbtack Jack deserves the pizza oven. Whoever gets it, I'm putting this out there. anybody buys that stuff.
Oh, shit.
If you buy that and you don't present, this should be like an occasion, like when France gave the Statue of Liberty to the United States. If someone actually does purchase the asset of the IWA Mid-South, then it should be a momentous ceremonial occasion when this person that makes this purchase presents the pizza oven as a gift of goodwill and harmony with our brothers internationally in the wrestling business and presents that oven to Thumbtack Jack.
Yes.
Because if I bought it, I would dip that thing in platinum and I'd give it to
him. Well, what I'm saying, when the ring, the merchandise, the everything is to be sold, do you think everyone will be paid back that is owed?
You got to be fucking kidding me.
I was going to say, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, like, come on.
I don't think that's
in any way even, and I don't even think really... I mean, I don't think anybody in their right mind even expect. I mean, even I'm not going to. I mean, look, the bottom line is, you know, you heard Tank talking about the paydays earlier. I mean,
right.
I saw a YouTube video with a cartoon from, like, the last time Ian went out of business last year talking about the Wells Dry where he, I mean, I guess it's not as shocking as, you know, compared to the nonchalant admission of peddling drugs to JC, but, you know, when he nonchalantly, like, well, you know, people book for me, like, what, they're shocked when they don't get paid? Like, why should they be shocked? I mean, the fact that he's just like, what do you mean they're pissed off because I didn't pay him? I mean, rotten, of course I didn't pay him. I almost find that funny, but honestly, what Bull said, I mean, I now, obviously, I don't get paid anywhere near as much as my brothers here because, I don't do what they do or whatever, but what I'm saying is I have never – ever said, every time, every agreement I ever had with Ian, whatever he agreed to compensate me, whatever amount of cash, the hotel room, whatever, he never, ever stiffed me in any way, shape, or form on money or any agreement that we had as far as the deal. He always lived up to his deal with me financially and through any other compensation that we agreed. And no, it was never a bottle of pills. And shit, I wasn't even lucky as Lane and Freak Show he never even gave me a bag of weed. But anyway, I just, you know, that's okay. My shit's better anyway. But it's just,
I have something that I've thought about for a while. So Ian Rotten sells the videotapes with our likenesses on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the fuck's our cut? Not only was I on the IWA 2001 King of Death matches, which I know sold well because I got my ass kicked, he then put it out on the Best of Ian Rotten, the Best of IWA, and sold it to the Backyard Wrestling companies that put it out on national release.
Yeah, I know Toby was a little upset when the Backyard Wrestling turned up, and there's Toby on the cover, and then whoever created that art took the liberty of blacking one of Toby's teeth out just to make it look more, like, you know, more hillbilly-ish or whatever the hell. He was real happy with that tooth being blacked out on purpose.
I don't know where the fuck my cut is.
I mean, the first thing is, I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, that's a real complex issue because it's another thing with him offering, you know, his assets for sale and interested. And then I see people weighing in on this that don't know what they're talking about. They're thinking he's trying to sell the back tape, so what, like a bunch of you? No, I mean, I believe what Ian and IWA are talking about is their rights to the back catalog of every match they've ever thrown. Now, the complexity of that, and then other people going, no, well, those belong to Smart Mark. Now, from what I know, and if I'm wrong, somebody, you know, Smart Mark Video can correct me, or, you know, one of the promoters can correct me. But if I'm not mistaken, from my knowledge, that basically the deal that Smart Mark has with all the promotions they work with is what we in the film and entertainment business, and usually not hear this in the wrestling business, but it certainly is the correct way to explain this,
is that they basically have shared ancillary rights, which means that the promotion and SmartMark are equal owners of the footage. SmartMark provides a master to the promotion. Now, SmartMark puts their version out, and SmartMark does pay a percentage back to the promotion. But these promotions have always had the right to take that master that SmartMark gives them and produce their own exclusive version and market their own copy. So while that's one thing that Ian got flamed for that I'll actually defend them on, because there were people over message boards claiming that he was bootlegging the SmartMark DVDs. No, he wasn't bootlegging them. Granted, he wasn't putting out a slip of a version, and certainly the SmartMark versions were more professional, were better packaged, were more reliable, were a better package for your money. But on the other hand, at least Ian was smart enough to do what most have not been smart enough to do, and that's that he took up the opportunity to produce his own version and make some extra money for his company on that. So what I don't understand, and I ask myself the same question, is how can he sell something that he only owns half the rights to? You know, in other words, like if somebody wanted to buy IWA tomorrow, okay, how? I mean, I know as a businessman, if I was going to make an investment, okay, and I'm going to purchase the rights to IWA Mid-South, I'm not going to purchase it based on the fact that SmartMark has a right to go out and, you know, so either the bottom line is they'd either be buying a product that somebody else still owns the right to make money off of and is out there competing against them basically with, or they would have to come to terms and buy it also from SmartMark. So, I mean, and, you know, with and not only that, in all fairness, and I'm not trying to stick my nose where it doesn't belong, but I don't think that even Ian himself, his family, would say anything different. I mean, you know, Mike Burns and SmartMark have helped Ian so much and his family over the years and really been generous with them and really, really taken care of them. So I don't see how you know, SmartMark is just ignored in that equation when you're offering up. I think that if you're going to offer to sell everything, I think that you should, because, you know, let's face it. I mean, there is a lot of stuff on that back catalog. I mean, there's a shitload of CM Punk. There's matches with Eddie Guerrero. There's matches with Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
There's matches with Tracy Smothers, with Evan Bourne, with Sabu, with Scorpio. I mean, Axel Rotten, you know, and so
Billy,
honestly,
I would have never seen anything IWA wise if it wasn't for SmartMark Video. I live in Jersey. I'm nowhere near over there, so definitely.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I certainly, you know, nobody in all of this has ever taken away that there was a period of IWA Mid South that was some of the best indie wrestling that's ever been produced ever, and it's a shame where it went, but, I mean, the bottom line is there's a lot of stuff in that back catalog to me as a fan that I could see. I mean, shit, I don't know why. I mean, I wonder if right now the WWE even knows what's going on, because I think, in a way, if you think of all those guys that they have some – they already own so much of the careers of so many of those people that I mentioned, and, you know, they've bought up every other back catalog from Smoky Mountain to Mid-South, you know, Bill Watts' company, you know, AWA.
Everything they bought,
so I don't know. I think right now, man, maybe, you know, it really might be a good start for you if, you know, maybe somebody up here at Stanford. Well, shit, I'm right down the street. Maybe tomorrow, you know, when I'm having lunch with Vince tomorrow, I'll mention it to him, you know. And
he'll probably
be me and Vince and Rob are going over to Smokey Joe's Barbecue down there across the street from Titan Towers tomorrow for lunch. So me and Vince are having lunch. I'll try to do it in a square and drop the word, you know.
I'm sure you will.
Out.
I'm sure Vince needs a pizza oven.
a little bit
maybe,
of the guy brought up there.
Yeah, maybe some. Yo, WrestleMania, book it, Vince. Fucking Thumbtack Jack putting fucking Snooki in that motherfucker, man. God damn it, why are they? We were talking about WrestleMania earlier. What the fuck is that bitch doing on the goddamn WrestleMania?
We gotta talk about that.
You know, and not only that, whose brilliant idea in advertising was it? I'm sorry, I gotta go on a little tangent here just to break the
tension
here.
Hold on, guys, my phone's gonna die here, so.
Okay.
All right, I will talk to you guys later. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks, Pete, man. I'll talk to you soon,
buddy. All right,
Jay, Eric, what I was going to say is, I don't know if you caught this, but
you know, I myself was like saying, man, for like the first time in a long time, I'm so interested in WrestleMania this year, and I don't know, like, you guys that know me know this. You know, you guys know that, you know, like a couple months back here, you know, we were lucky enough in the middle of something that Triple H was over here at the house where I lived for the day, and we got to hang out and shit like that. So I kind of got to, like, you know, I didn't spoil nothing, but I had kind of had some inside info on what was going down before the rest of the world did, so I kind of was interested in that. So I finally, you know, I'm really interested in this epic encounter between the game and the Undertaker and a couple of, you know, the Rock coming back and the tension between him and Cena. God damn it, I'm rooting for the Rock for once, you know, because, you know, nothing bad about John Cena in real life because I hear he's a real swell guy, but, you know, as far as
but
the character.
But they're not even
in
a match, so, you know.
I'm a heel mark, you know, and shit like that, so I kind of really have been enjoying, like, the Rock tearing into fucking Cena's character a lot.
Wait, one thing.
Real quick, and then ask me this again, because I talked right over you. I didn't hear what the fuck you said. What I was going to say is, in the midst of having to hear that the bitch is going to have a fucking match at WrestleMania and all this shit, her slapping Vicky Guerrero in the ear, which was horrible and, like really bad. I felt bad that Vicky Guerrero was slapped in the ear by somebody that's not trained in the business. But anyway, I was watching, and then all of a sudden it gets the commercial break. And I'm cringing. I've got Snooki in a fucking bathing suit by a tanning bed shilling fucking pistachios. Now, is it just me, okay? Who gets paid? I can't imagine what this advertising firm, like what this guy that came up with this commercial got paid to say, you know what'll really sell some pistachios, man? Let's put Snooki in a fucking bathing suit by a tanning bed. That'll really kick them pistachios moving off the shelf. I mean, first of all, is advertising for pistachios even necessary? Is it like someone was like sitting at home and went, what? A pistachio? Honey, come in here. There's a new nut. I never heard of this one. It's a fucking pistachio. And if it wasn't for Snooki, I would have, you know, like, I mean, and to me, actually, every time I see, I love pistachios. They're a gourmet of nuts, a king of nuts, but, you know, me, I'm the kind of guy, I just kind of think that if it was me and I owned the pistachio company, I'd just put my nuts on a shelf and wait for somebody to come by and grab them. But now the bottom line is, man, I go in the supermarket, I go in the convenience store, I'm in the nut aisle, and I'm going right past the pistachios because my stomach's turning because I keep picturing Snooki in that bathing suit by that fucking tanning bed, and I'm going right to the macadamias. Now, what were you going to ask me? I'm sorry.
Since you said you're such a huge, and I'd rather, macadamias, I'd definitely go with that.
So you got disappointed when I wasn't on Raw on 2/21/11, man?
I was disappointed. I was. Come on.
Cool.
But my question was, you know, as a fan of the heels, who do you think is the best heel in the WWE right now?
Well, you know,
and put your personal feelings aside, you know.
No, I will.
I don't know who you like, who you don't like.
You know what? You know what's really, really weird is that really a lot of the people that I pay. I mean, really, when you get to like Cena and The Rock, right? There's the tension between them. There's no heel. They're not heels. Neither one of them is heel. The tension between The Game and The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, like none of them are a heel. So it's really weird because the people that are capturing my attention the most as far as a fan watching it, it's almost like there is no fucking heel. You know what I mean? I'm a big fan of other people in the WWE that I really have a lot of, I mean, very obviously I love The Undertaker. I love Triple H, and that was even before I was here kissing his ass at our house. But I mean, literally, didn't have to, man. What a great guy. Paul is an awesome human being and a really great guy. And it was just I thank my business partner Rob and my friend Tom Savini that they provided the opportunity, and he just was so gracious, sat down, talked with me. You know, it was a week before Cage of Death, talked about what I was going to do. He was like, dude, he goes, how fucking old are you? And I told him, he's like, dude, I would not do that ever. He goes, you're fucking crazy, dude. But
why? And then I explain why. He goes, oh, time for you to die. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, good luck with that, bro. You know what I mean? And we all know what happened. But just a great guy. I mean, we got to sit down and talk about everybody from, you know, the Horsemen to the Road Warriors. I mean, we talked wrestling, talked psychology, talked the business, MMA. I mean, really, really, really genuinely down to earth. Not the guy that you would expect. And I've always been I admire his work a lot. But other people in the WWE right now that I really admire their work a lot, very strange, being the heel that I am, I kind of say, like, man, they don't have a lot of heels that really are super over with me. I mean, I love Edge and Christian. I love that they're both back together. I think that's a good thing. But I'm a fan of both of them and their work, and I really think they earned and deserve their spot at the top. I love Kane, you know, very obviously. I got to say, I mean, I think the Miz does a good job, you know what I mean?
Or
you wouldn't have the spot, but I mean, I'm not going to run up the stairs and trip because I'm going to miss his spot on the show. I mean, like, I kind of think the whole I'm awesome thing is kind of like a direct ripoff of Mr. Kennedy at this point. I mean, it was kind of like he just took the same gimmick and you know, he's like doing the whole bit with the mic and everything like that. I kind of think that's the same. So, like, when it comes to a really super, you know who I like? What's the Italian guy with his own announcer? What's his name?
Alberto Del Rio.
Now that guy is a good heel. I like him. I think he's just.
There's no thought about it. There's no long conversation, and I'm gonna tell you mine, and then you can give me your reaction. But I think hands down, full best heel in the fucking business right now, it has to be CM Punk.
Oh boy.
I agree,
the bottom line is for me, okay, you know, I guess, I mean, you're always happy to see somebody, you know, come up through the indies and get a break regardless, you know, but I think that, you know, the bottom line is because of my close personal associations and friendships with certain people, you know, that I work in the wrestling business with, and people that I was with hanging out even before I returned to the business myself, you know, like, got a lot of bad stuff personally on the dude, you know, like, you know, from those years, and then also through my sources on the inside here, lots of bad character things about him, like, quite frequently, you know, through the grapevine, you know, which is real life, and I know that really shouldn't affect you. It's kind of hard not to. I think he has been doing really great mic work. I of course also don't, like, I just, I am a really, really have a really, really strong disdain for this whole modern straight edge movement. Okay, and I don't. Let me qualify. Okay, that if somebody chooses to not consume drugs or alcohol or tobacco, and it's a health decision, and it's a psychological decision, and it's a spiritual decision, then despite any of my own bad habits, or not bad habits, depending on what your belief is, I applaud them. Because if it's good for them and that's what makes them feel good, there's no doubt that probably physically it's better for their health. Psychologically, I don't know about that. But, in other words, what I'm saying, bravo. I mean, if you can do that and you can toe that line, that's great. However, thing is, when it comes out to preaching it to others, and not just preaching it, but shoving it down their throat, that's the next bit. And in other words, an aura of, well, I'm better than you because you do this. I don't like that. And the other thing is that I'm an old guy, so I know where the straight edge movement comes from. Okay, the straight edge movement, when it started, it's an offshoot of the skinheads and the American Nazi Party. You know what I mean? So all these kids that are running around today, putting, yeah, I'm a straight edge, yeah, straight edge, yeah, straight edge, and it's like, well. It, to me, it's like, wow, you're Hitler Youth, you know, and, like, you don't even know where this thing comes from that you're, you know, it's like trying to say, like, you know, well, hey, the swastika didn't always represent Nazis, and that's true, it didn't. It was around for thousands of years in every culture, from Asian culture to American Indian culture, but the bottom line is, guess what? If you see a swastika today,
what's the first thing that goes through your mind? And it's always going to, okay? What happened has happened. So to me, straight edge is always going to be an offshoot of the skinheads. And so to me, for people to join this team and act like they're making a choice that's about the self, about being a strong individual, when really you're just giving into another kind of conformity, I mean, the bottom line is it just destroys my ability to be objective and just appreciate the guy's work. I mean, there's no doubt he's a hell of a wrestler. There's no doubt he's charismatic. There's no doubt he's good on the mic, but I just can't get around all the other shit. So I'm admitting I'm not objective. You know, I'm sorry, but I'm human, and I can't remove myself from all the shit that bothers me about the guy, is what I'm saying.
I understand.
At one point he was smoking a joint with everybody else. And then when he came to that decision, he was coming to Toby and several others and saying, oh, man, you guys are shit because you smoke pot. I'm better than you. You know, and it's like, well, wait a minute. I got this JCW video of you here smoking a joint on camera. You know what I mean? How did you all of a sudden become better than my friend? You know, and so, you know, that's I just honestly can't be objective about him, Jay. But if you say he's that good, then I'll believe you.
No,
you don't have
I do hear you. And honestly, Billy, you know that ain't my lifestyle. And
yeah, you smoke pot?
Huh?
What, you smoke pot? I didn't know that. Did you?
I
really?
Do what?
Smoke weed? Man? Shit, man. Why didn't you ever tell me that? I would have. You could have smoked weed, man.
I mean, sometimes
weed.
I cut the grass, but I don't. Weeds? Okay. I don't even have a weed whacker. I don't know what you're talking about. But, however, everything aside, I mean, this guy, whatever he preaches in his personal life, and honestly, like, I liked him in the indies, but he wasn't, like, my top guy, you know? Like, you could tell he had talent. You know, we had Justice Payne on, and he said he was a huge fucking asshole, and he didn't even give him the time of day to put a match together.
There was a notorious a match that everybody still talks about to this day where those guys where that didn't, you know, it's pretty, I mean, you know, you can get it from smartmarkvideo.com, you know, go check it out, and they will absolutely steer you to the right DVD and check out this shit, you know, look at it with a whole new set of eyes, buy yourself a copy. And don't forget to buy copies of all those DVDs that, you know, ask for Cult Fiction, people. When you're ordering those Smart Mark DVDs, say, I want to hear Billy Graham.
Yeah,
Munson.
Do that.
Run it
you know,
some more.
Tell Smart Mark they need a Cult Fiction best of DVD. A compilation of Cult Fiction.
That'd be awesome. I got a lot more stuff that I can talk about that's not, you know, we could, you know, let's put it this way. We could do that and we could never even mention Ian's name, you know, and I'm sure that people would say
of course. But
chance,
I was saying, you know, wasn't the biggest fan of CM Punk on the indies, but I did like him. I thought he was pretty good. You know, he definitely did his work.
I didn't like when he was making fun. When Toby and Necro were fighting that match at the King of the Death, when Toby powerbombed Necro on the floor, I didn't like when he was making fun of Toby Bear either. Here we go.
His commentary, and it's been you know, it's been talked about through Necro and a bunch of people that they really took exception to him making jokes during their matches where they were really killing each other. So I understand that. I understand all of that. But when he went to the WWE, it was good to see an indie guy up there, as well as, man, the progression that this guy took and the promos. And, you know, he put the one promo out. It was probably a month or two ago. He was standing up on top of the Titantron, and he was telling everybody that he was going to make the ultimate sacrifice.
I like that. I thought that was pretty heavy.
To show everybody what this is worth, and then showed everybody later on he had a harness on and said, hey, you fucking stupid people. Yeah. You think I would do that for you? No.
Yeah.
I
was enjoying it, and then it was just weird because I don't always watch, but I was watching that, and you know what? I was enjoying it, and then when he showed the thing with the harness and stuff like that, it kind of went sour for me because for some reason, I mean, it kind of just brought up the whole Owen Hart thing for me. It just kind of I'm just telling you, for me, it hit a weird nerve, like and that's my own, but it just hit some kind of weird nerve, like. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because when he was saying, you know, you think I'd really do this for you fucking people, you know, and, well, he didn't obviously drop no F-bombs, you know, but what I mean, you know what's weird? Like, I don't, what was that thing, you know, before, see, I don't like this whole other Nexus thing. Like, I've had a Nexus out the ass. What I'm saying is I liked him better when he just had the chick with her head shaved and the other big guy that used to be the doofus, that guy, like, you know, what was the guy that was the guy?
Festus.
I was a fan of the Festus character.
Luke Gallows.
Yeah, I liked it better, you know, when he was doing that gimmick, when he had those two and they were his followers, like his little cults, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, I guess I'm just a mark for cults, I don't know why, but, you know, like, I kind of was digging that, and I thought they could have taken that further, so kind of for me, it was wait a minute, man, you've been doing this fucking Nexus shit for how long, and now you took Nexus, and you made half of them into that's
well,
still Nexus to me. And
he did, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, he didn't, right, yeah, but, you know.
That's what it is, you know. He's made a good progression when, you know, with the cards he's been dealt, he's done a good switch, I think.
Yep.
Outside of that, I mean, there's a lot of other shit going on.
I think Kofi Kingston is an awesome fucking performer, man. I love Kofi Kingston. Yeah.
I agree with you, but I don't think he's handed a good fucking deck right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't at all. He's been at a point where he's been handed titles, and he's also at this point. Does he have a match on WrestleMania?
I don't know.
I think
another thing we're hitting on here really is, so you came up with Punk, but really, like, going back to what I was saying earlier, is just like, where are the great villains? I mean, they, you know, I'll tell you what,
right.
a year ago, Orton was the awesomest fucking heel. You know, like, he was so good, man. Like, his whole thing of kicking people in the fucking head and just being completely crazed, you know what I mean? And it was so good.
Well, yes.
I mean, people can't cut a promo. Yeah. That's why he needs a manager and you know, listen.
He needs,
Vince,
needs a half-breed. He just, you
that's
know,
why
some shit needs
talk.
To happen.
Yeah, he needs to talk for him, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think somebody's listening out there. They may be.
Sometimes the best solution is right up the block. You hear me, WWE?
Yeah.
You know, it's right up the block. Isn't
it?
Drop the ball.
You know, I and not only that, but, you know, I can, like, they could have me, like, cutting video in the daytime, you know, freaking, I'd do six jobs, you know what I mean, for half the price of what somebody else would do it, and certainly well, I will tell you this, I do have this bit of insider information, there very well may be, before our lifetime ends, there very well, just as surely as the business, the managers were killed in the business, there very well may be a renaissance on the horizon here. The managers very well may be making a return to the national spotlight. It's got
good
authority. Okay? And, there are
a lot of these guys can't even cut promos to save their goddamn life.
Yeah, that's true. They're really bad. And especially, I mean, they're already fucking writing it for you. I mean, they're already handing you the fucking material. And it's, like, weird for me because, to me, that's, you know, that's what a manager's foremost key job is to talk, is to tell the story, and all the great ones, that's what they did. And, you know, we're used to working, like, you know, like, they give me two or three bullet points, you know what I mean? They say, look, you got to put this over, you got to make sure you mention this, and make sure it looks like this, and then, I mean, with me, you know how it is, that's why I'm grateful for that part of the opportunity, because they do let me just kind of, like, take those couple bullet points, and there's been, I mean, I got to say, you know, DJ's had the confidence in me that way. Mike Burns had the confidence in me that way. Zandig, Maven Bentley, they've all, you know, I mean, even Ian, I mean, for the most part, there was one time when Ian kind of, like, wrote my promo, and it's a promo I don't like. It was really, really strange. It was really, I'm not saying this to put him down, it's just really weird, because when you go back to that CZW-IWA feud, there was a, way back, there was almost the exact same promo that Ian did, what he made me do later. It was him and Necro, I think, I don't know, but he made me do the same thing with Deranged. It was just like, you know, fuck the homosexual undertones. It was like,
it was so, it wasn't even an undertone, like it, this whole thing, he's coming, he's coming, he's coming. I mean, I see that promo every time and I cringe because if you, I know that if somebody was walking through the room and they couldn't see what was on the screen, they would definitely think that they were listening to a porno. You know what I mean? Like a gay porn. And I'm not letting anybody go down. I'm just saying, hey, that's what it sounded. And it was just, you know, he's got me stroking deranged, big, bald head and saying, he's coming, he's coming. I mean, every time I fucking see it, man, I get the will. I'm like, ooh, yeah. You know, I mean, like, this isn't, that was not me. You know, I didn't, that was the one time that somebody just outright, like, said, you're going to do this. And I was like, Jesus Christ, man, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Like, this is what I wanted to do, you know what I mean? But, you know, I still did what, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, we'll get in like a challenge. Like, you know, be a professional. The guy's the boss. He's telling you what to do. Do what he tells you to do. And I still don't like that one. I still like it. It's just not my character, man. You know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah, I understand.
So I don't know. Like, it's like, I guess what we're talking about now, it's like, where are the great villains, man? I mean, where are the bad guys in the WWE? I mean, where is the dominant?
That's why right now he stands out as the guy who has control over people. Like, he has that, like, you know, I mean, of all people, you have to know what I'm talking about. Is that,
yeah, no, I do. No, I've seen it. You know what I mean? I can, like I said, I can see that. I just am admitting my inability to maybe appreciate him as much as I should, you know what I mean, and what he's accomplishing, because I've got these splinters in my jaws over him, and so I just, you know, and it's not only that, I guess it's just like earlier I was talking about the talent of Sammy Callahan, you know, of Moxley. It's like I look at, you know, Sammy, Moxley, Robert Anthony, Adam Cole, and I know as unpopular as this makes, you know, me, I am a huge fan of Sabian's, and I think that Sabian has all, I think I say all those guys' names because I think that every one of those guys, and it's not to take away, see, I'm saying that those five guys right there, Moxley, Sammy, Adam Cole, Robert Anthony, Sabian, I think every one of those men absolutely has the total package. They have all the tools necessary, from their ability to wrestle, their charisma, their acting ability, their promo skills, their inventiveness, their energy, their passion. I think all five of those guys could absolutely make it in the WWE if they were given the chance.
I agree 100%.
And now don't get me wrong, I'm not overlooking the talents of everybody else in the indies. Like, obviously, I believe very much in the talent of everybody. Like, CZW, there's not been a time when I don't believe in anybody in that locker room. And I'm a bit of a wrestling historian and an overmark. I mean, 64, my first show I attended. But I kind of, like, you know, I miss the days of, like, what I grew up on when everybody in wrestling wasn't pretty, you know, at a major level. You know what I mean? I grew up in the era of the Gorilla Monsoon and Bulldog Brower and the Sheik and Bulldog Don Kent and Dick the Bruiser and Ox Baker, and you know what I mean? So, like, I just kind of, like, you know, and Haystacks Calhoun and Taru Tanaka and Chief J. Strongbow and the Moondogs and, you know, the Valiant Brothers. And it's like, so in other words, what I'm saying is, another thing I love about the indies, and that's why people can say whatever they want about guys like Tank, The Range, whatever, it's like, give me back my ugly fucking wrestlers too, man. Give me back my big guys, my heavy guys. You know, give me back my hillbilly and my monster, my scary monster, you know what I mean? Like, so I like the variants, you know what I mean? But as far as,
you know, have you seen Brodus Clay?
Yeah.
What do you think about that guy?
I think he's pretty neat, man. I think it's pretty, like, I was like, okay, that's a heel, you know.
Kind of reminds you of an old school big fucking dude, right?
Yeah.
That's how
Kirk bottom line is, that's why I was a big fan of the Caden Murdoch team a couple years back, because I thought that there was something about them that harkened back more to an early 80s NWA style, where, like, you know, the one guy was a little bit more ripped and a little more pretty, and then you had Trevor Murdoch was a little bit more, you know what I mean? Oh, and Trevor, man, I got the chance to work the one show for Ian with him, and the guy was a great guy, man. It's like really, really nice guy, man. Like, really, in fact, I called commentary on a match that him and Insane Wayne.
my buddy there. Hey, Lane, shout out.
Nice.
You know what? I'll give a shout out to Nick Papagiorgio, too. How about that, man?
All right.
Felt like it.
All
I,
right,
I miss everybody down there, man. I don't know who else is listening, but you know who I missed the hell out of so bad? I missed the hell out of. We're talking about the business. We're talking about managers. I missed the hell out of the. You know, I there's no doubt that I am the second best. I am the second greatest. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. I'm the second greatest. I am the second greatest manager in the professional wrestling business today, and I miss more than anybody. More than anybody. I miss Robbie Moreno so badly. I don't know what he even
so
is.
So do we in the
CZW
world.
I miss both of our best managers
in the business.
Seeing him, you know what I mean, and hanging out and talking about our lives, and I hope, you know, say hi to the boy. I hope he's doing good. And that's one of my dreams, man. I forever so wanted to be in a situation where Cult Fiction could have a feud with the Blackout, you know, and I mean full on force, you know what I mean, the full on Blackout versus the full on Cult Fiction. I would just really love that, you know, like love to do that, you know, someday maybe.
Now, some of the things you had talked about a minute ago that maybe you want to go there is I don't know if you've heard about it or whatever, but let's get into right quick the WWE Hall of Fame. And they're inductees this year. What are your thoughts on that? Have you heard any of them?
Well, the one that I have heard that I think is despicable, and it's nothing personally against the man, but I want to know how Drew Carey can go into a WWE Hall of Fame when Tiger Chung Lee and Iron Mike Sharp and Moondog Spot and Rene Goulet and all these other guys, I don't know, maybe one of those guys.
The Macho Man, Randy Savage, fucking the Ultimate Warrior.
Randy's got the heat. You know, with him in that. And so, we all know that.
Jesus Christ.
No, look, sooner or later he'll be in it. He will be. It's like Pete Rose in baseball, man. You know, I mean, like, Saturday
you know,
get in there.
Between Warrior, but, even though, you know, he's in that bag and everything else, he puts
You talking about Jim Helwig?
I don't even
know him well personally, although we actually a couple years ago did have a personal interaction, a feud, verbally across the internet. Like I despise that fucking Jim Helwig, man. Like, I think he's a fucking asshole, man. You know what I mean?
And,
like,
and
it makes me
I
sick.
I don't blame
makes,
you.
Makes me sick that he paints, like, Sitting Bull and stuff like that. Like, it's a disgrace to my people. Does he belong in the WWE Hall of Fame? He absolutely does, even though I despise him. Because that character was a huge, did a lot of business for them. I mean, you know, Hogan and the Warrior, it's funny because, like, I couldn't stand either character, you know what I mean? But, you know, to deny that they were, I mean, the epic clash between those two, I mean, this is like, you know, one of the most momentous meetings in the history of the wrestling business. You know, but
arena explode the way he did, then I mean, you can't doubt.
The bottom line is, it doesn't matter whether he appealed to me or not. The bottom line is that the guy sold tickets. He put asses in the seats. He mesmerized and captivated children, made them millions of dollars. So, like, is he Tully Blanchard? Fuck no. He's not even he's not even in the same breath with Road Warrior Hawk or Nikita Koloff as far as his physical abilities. But, you know, does he belong in the WWE Hall of Fame? I dare say yes. You know, anybody that did that much business for him and is such an iconic figure that turned so many people onto the business and made them tuning into their TVs on Saturday mornings. I mean, of course he belongs in, but give me the list of who's going in this year.
And then another team who you just mentioned half of is the Road Warriors are going in this year.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yes, they are.
Well, that's obviously well deserved. I mean,
of course.
You know, for a lot of people, you know, arguably one of the greatest tag teams in the history of the business. I was a big Road Warriors fan when they peaked as far as being heels. I mean, I kind of peaked with them. I saw, if you go back to the summer of 85, they had 8 matches. They were still AWA tag team champions, and they did a cross promotion with the NWA. They did in the summer of 85 called World War III, where the AWA tag team champion Road Warriors would face combinations of the NWA world champions, the Russian team, Crusher Khrushchev, Nikita Koloff, Ivan Koloff. I was live and present for 6 of those 8 matches. I was in Baltimore, D.C., Philly, the Meadowlands.
That's kind of like where the Road Warriors peaked for me, because I had been cheering for them for so long as heels, and then the first match in that was at the Philadelphia Civic Center, and as soon as the Road Warriors came out and the people started to chant USA, like, they kind of like lost their shine for me right at that moment. I mean, like, because I was hoping it was just going to be like, wow, like, these bad guys are going to kill each other. This is going to be awesome. And then, like, when they were just faces simply on the basis of fighting the Russians, I just gave them really bad shit. I was in the front row, and, you know, like, I just rooted for my Russians, man. You know what I mean? But I right after that, when they did come into the NWA, I mean, I think their feud with the Powers of Pain kind of never lived up to its potential before they bugged out and split for the WWE. I think that could have been bigger. Certainly when they were involved in that whole period of, like, the War Games era for the Great American Bash, you know, where they were teaming up with Dusty and Magnum and teaming up with Dusty and Barry Windham or whatever. I think Windham was a horseman at that time, but, you know, the Road Warriors and Dusty and whoever was the fourth man against any combination of the horsemen in the War Games matches and stuff like that. I mean, the bottom line is, as far as being one of the greatest tag teams of all times, one of the greatest tag team attractions of all times, one of the most charismatic tag teams of all times, one of the biggest monster tag teams of all times. But then on the other hand of it, also one of the, you know, in Mike, you know, one of the biggest tragedies in the business, probably as far as his personal demons. You know, certainly not as far as holding up and looking at the wrestling 20 years later. I mean, the physical, I mean, certainly they were just two big jacked up guys that had that charisma and that size. But, I mean, this is in an era when you had so many great technical wrestlers. Bottom line is, what I'm telling you is, they were no Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson. They weren't, you know. So, I mean, they deserve their spot. It's way due. I mean, and certainly they belong there. But I'd certainly like to see some of the teams that you know, were the great technical teams get that kind of recognition.
Well, they were talking about the only way of putting those two guys in, speaking about one of the people you mentioned, is putting the Brainbusters in as a team. Otherwise, Vince wouldn't give either guy the nod.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know why or what, and I don't know. You know, see, a lot of times, listen, man, I'm actually a fan of Vince McMahon, have a lot of respect for the man, and I only believe I don't even believe half of what I hear, and I hear a lot of other things that people don't hear in light of positive things. I mean, and
right.
You know, and in the way of positive things, you know what I mean? And the bottom line is, there is, I know this sounds weird coming from a guy that just exposed some scandal in the wrestling business, but I mean, a lot of the people that are out there today that are former WWE superstars that are running their mouths and, you know, exposing all this shit. I mean, I think the key being is that they weren't exposing it when they were making a couple $100,000 a year and they were on the TV 5 days a week and they were over. I think that they only exposed things once their time in the spotlight ended. You know what I mean? So, you know, you got to question that as far as truth, as far as integrity, as far as exaggeration, because, I mean, you know, a lot of people were lucky they ever got that spot, and he's the one that gave it to them. But as far as him not wanting to do that, I don't know what that entails. I mean, that's strange to me, because I know that Arn, you know, for so long had a role behind the scenes with the WWE,
of course.
I mean, if that's the way they got to get in, that's fine. I mean, but. I mean, there's no doubt.
I mean,
as far,
but you
know, got to
look at Drew Carey getting in before
Arn, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard belong in the Hall of Fame. I mean, they do. I mean, anybody, you know, there's not even. Yeah, I mean, there's no. So who else? So we got this year. We got Drew Carey and we got the Road Warriors. Who else do we got?
Of course, you know, headlining the whole thing is Shawn Michaels.
Oh, Shawn's getting put in now.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's headlining the whole thing. I mean, there's not a lot of argument there. You know, I've seen this Drew Carey's getting in. There's a lot more to be said.
You know, I don't think there's an argument as whether he belongs. That would be retarded. But, I mean,
right.
I'm just saying, I think it's kind of early because he's just been so active up to recently. I mean, he was on the show on Monday night in the middle of an angle. You know what I mean? So I kind of think, like, I mean, for me,
he only started coming back after they announced him.
I know, but I kind of, like, for me, I kind of like seeing, like, a Hall of Fame, what you traditionally think of is you know, like the sunset, you know, for a career in any sport or in any entertainment.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
Well,
he's
so
supposedly
kind of like,
retired, so, you know.
I know, but you get what I'm saying. He's not an old man.
No, I do.
And,
I do.
You know,
it's only a year.
In other words, like, it'd be, like, kind of cool if, like, you know, like, why can't Sean wait till he's bald and has gray hair? You know what I mean? Like, it's just because there's all these other people. There's all these other, you know, elders and people that are still with us now. I mean, you know, give me the rest of the list, and then I'm going to tell you the biggest omission, biggest guy being snubbed and ignored in the entire fucking situation. But you give me the rest of the list for who they're putting in.
All right. There's only two more, but it's Sonny.
Oh, man. I wish she wanted me because we know we want her.
Well, depending on the period, because there are points that...
There were points where no,
and then several points were wow, she's unbelievable. You know, so
she was the character that, you know, caused the whole, you know, overkill with the TNA factor. And you know what? I'm a heterosexual male, and I'm sure there's a lot of bi and lesbian women that would agree that.
Oh,
there's nothing wrong with having a lot of nice tits and ass in wrestling, okay? Like, I enjoy it being there, you know what I mean? Although, I don't like it when they took most... I think there's been a change a little bit and a progression that's for the positive with the women in the WWE, but, I mean, it had degraded so bad in the last couple of years to where, like, every chick there... When I heard rumors that Mickie James was being dismissed because she was too heavy... It made me sick. I mean, there was chicks in TNA. Yeah, so many of those chicks had gotten to the point where they're like skinnier than Billy Graham, and it's like, come on, man. I mean, you know, and then you see somebody like Victoria, who's such a great wrestler, who did so much for him. You know what I mean? And get, you know, you see him drop her, and I know a lot about, you know, I got an opportunity to hang out with her a couple times, and. Hear a lot of what went on for her with her career. I think it's kind of a shame because I think that she was one of those people that contribute a lot more than she'll ever be given credit for, you know. And so, with Sonny, you just got to give the nod that kind of ushered in that whole. I mean, don't get me wrong. You had I'm a big Missy Hyatt mark. You know, you had girls like Missy Hyatt and
Precious, but.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, you got to start acknowledging those characters, and certainly Sonny was the first one, you know, that Tammy Lynn Sitch was the first one in that game. And she certainly did work with a lot of really key figures at points in the whole situation. She wasn't a lot of main angles that Tammy was throwing, and she's a really, you know, controversial figure, and by many a beloved figure in the business. So, I'm not going to fault her because it kind of opens up the doorway to slowly putting more of these women in there, you know. So,
I hear, but just look at it like this: like, all right, Michaels, great career, everything. He retires a year later.
Road Warriors,
Hall of Fame.
Road Warriors.
Female wise,
I would think that Ivory belongs in before her because of what her role was in training all the women, you know what I mean?
But even that, you know, one of the top female competitors in the WWE ever, Trish Stratus. Right. Trish had to go to bat and say, hey, man, yeah, I just want to put my word out there that, you know, China really belongs in this shit. And it had to have been like, not quite direct on Sonny, but in the same token, like, as a legend herself on the female end of the WWE, she said, hey, you know what, let me mention, you know, China belongs in this shit. You know right?
Listen, with Joni's stuff, that it's, you know, once again, it's that, I think, kind of trying to move, you know, further past, I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but Sonny had a clear reputation.
I agree, but
she had her dark period, I guess, too. But I mean, you know, kind of the stuff with Joni and the WWE was kind of put out there more in the public. I mean, I know that A lot of people I know her and really think the world of her and think she's a cool person. But, you know, bottom line is this happens in every form of entertainment when some, like what we've been going through now, when somebody's, when the crap, when the scandal and the bullshit comes out, it tends to, like, you know, it like, look who's talking right now. I mean, it dampens your reputations. It puts a taint on you, and people want to move away from it. And so I'm suffering from my own microcosm of that. I don't think that forever they're going to ignore China. I don't think they can. I don't think there'll be any justice in that. Yeah. Oh, well, Trish, but, you know, she's getting in there having a match with Snooki, right? So, I mean, she's still active.
She's still semi-active, and she's training and everything, but...
Right, and once again,
she's definitely
in good
graces.
No, I could see the argument but once again, you know, Sunny peaked and everything before the China era. You know what I mean? So as long as China isn't ignored forever, then I don't think that the two things should be one looking at the other.
Has Miss Elizabeth put in the WWE Hall of Fame?
You know, I don't know, but
I don't know.
That kind of goes to the association with Savage. You know what I mean? Like, and then and not only that, you know, you've got, you know, here's another tragedy in the wrestling business. You know what I mean? They don't want to have.
That's why I heard that they were going to avoid the Road Warriors,
but the bottom line is the Road Warriors are going in, and one of them can't be there. So
right.
The bottom line is they can't do an entire roster of people going in for the class of 2011 to have somebody else coming up and accepting the award, because it just makes the business,
right.
It makes people think of all the wrong things. So, you know, I think that would be another decision you just got to respect. You know, they've got to round it out. So who else?
Yeah, but you can't just not ever do it.
There's one more
now.
You haven't mentioned. Who's the other one?
And the one more spot is something you might like if you haven't heard, and that's Abdullah the Butcher.
You know, that did catch my attention the other day, and it kind of, like, shocked me and threw me for a loop, and it kind of segues me into what I'm going to say the most ignored person is, and I made this person a promise, a person really close to me, but concerning this. But what bottom line it is like, I think it's a really commendable thing, and it speaks volumes to where the mindset is at the WWE now, because we all know that I don't even know that Abdullah the Butcher ever had a match ever in any form of the WWE. I don't even know if he even worked in.
I don't believe so.
I mean, there's a possibility that he might have worked a WWF show at some obscure point, you know, in the late 70s or so. I don't know. But I don't have the stats in front of it. I assume he didn't. So somehow them putting him in there, I mean, it's just, and I mean, also kind of a strange choice, because as much as he's an icon to fans of hardcore wrestling and to certain promotions at a certain point, I mean, it's not like he was, you know, an athlete of the caliber of the Funks it's not like he was a multi-title holder, and it's not like he ever, so to me, them acknowledging him is really good. Now, do you want to know who the person is that is the person that belongs more now, and in a similar vein, didn't make his name, although he did work for one short period of time for the WWF, and one even shorter period of time for the WWF, the man who belongs in that Hall of Fame, just like Abdullah the Butcher, that did not make his name there, but belongs in there more than any person in the business, is Ox Baker. And I can tell you this, and it's not just because of my association and him being one of my mentors and my teachers, but I'll tell you that, you know, we were talking about the Road Warriors and The Undertaker so much tonight, okay? Ox Baker had a hand in training The Undertaker. He trained Brian Clark, Adam Bomb. The Road Warriors approached Ox in about 1986 or 87, and they came up to Ox and they said, "Oh my God, we're so glad to meet you. We want your autograph. You're the only wrestler we've ever asked for an autograph." And that's because, if you understand it, Hawk and Animal grew up in the Minneapolis area and the Chicago area. Okay, they grew up on Ox Baker, and they outright credit Ox Baker as being the reason that they became professional wrestlers, okay? Further than that, other than his contributions in that way, okay, Ox Baker is the guy that changed the wrestling promo into what it is today. Okay? There would be no superstar Billy Graham. There would be no Hulk Hogan. There would be no Undertaker if it was not for the influence of Ox Baker. And not only that, if you take something we talked about, I think the first show I did with you guys, is that, you know, the two incidences, you know, the deaths of Alberto Torres and Ray Gunkel, which, of course, were not Ox's fault, had nothing to do with the hard punch. But nonetheless, it was the first time in wrestling, you know, now today we take it for granted that, you know, the line we walk between what is real and what is purely an angle and a work of fiction. Right. You know, today we always bring in our real. I mean, even the Road Warriors did it. They took it was tragic, but the, you know, with Mike's problems with alcohol and drugs, the last run they had in the WWE, what they try to do, they try to use that as the storyline. You know, they do these things. You know, Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit. You know, on and on and on. Like, what's going on in real life? Trying to use that as part of the material. Well, Ox Baker and the deaths of Alberto Torres and Ray Gunkel were the first time that the wrestling business ever did that. Okay, they put it out there that Ox killed somebody with his move, and the man was really dead. And he had other wrestlers trying to kill him that bought the work themselves. You know what I mean? So the Cleveland Rumble, you know, when he was repeatedly hitting Ernie Ladd with the, you know, 7,000 people back then was a big crowd for professional wrestling. Seven, you watch the tapes. The Cleveland Rumble is infamous. He, you know, he's got Ernie Ladd, who's the biggest face at that time, and Ernie Ladd, I believe, is already in the WWE Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. He's got him down on the mat. Cowboy Bob Ellis is in the ring watching his back, and Ox is just, he's already hit him with the one heart punch. He's down on his back, and Ox is just giving him heart punch after heart punch, and the crowd becomes convinced that Ox is killing Ernie Ladd, and 7,000 people riot and try to kill Ox Baker and Cowboy Bob Ellis. I mean, come after them with knives. I mean, when you put over a work so well that 7,000 people riot and try to murder you, I mean, who's ever done that? Has Steve Austin done that? And I'm not putting down Steve Austin. I'm saying, has The Rock done that? Has Hulk Hogan done that? Has the arena rioted and tried to kill Hollywood Hulk Hogan? No, they didn't. And if you go back and look at the IWA Mid-South Double Death Tag Team Tournament 2008, the first night, the falling out between, you know, the dysfunctional family, Cult Fiction, you know, Toby and Necro, the Tough Crazy Bastards versus Deranged and Brain Damaged, the vulgar display of power, you know, Cult Fiction imploding, the main event of the first night of King of the Death, you'll notice that we paid tribute to Ox with that, because Brain Damage, we recreated that whole thing where Brain Damage gave Necro the heart punch, and then I insisted that he keep doing it, and, you know, Necro is down, and Brain Damage is giving, you know, Necro heart punch after heart punch, and then Pondo and Ian have to come, and for the first time ever, the Necro Butcher is carried from the ring, as the commentators say, he's killing the Necro Butcher. I mean, that was our homage and our tribute and acknowledgement to Ox and recreating that, you know, and it worked. You know, I mean, it was over, like, really great, you know what I mean? It was just so fun to do that because of, you know, knowing where it came from and everything, you know, I pushed and pushed for us to do that at some point, and that finally that night they said, you know what, that'll be cool, we will do that. You know, this was one of the times I got an idea in there that, you know, it wasn't an original idea, but it was with intent that I wanted to send it to Ox and say, hey, look, man, we do. So, you know, his effect on the promos, on the characters, the people that he trained, the first media crossover superstar, you know, with him doing Escape from New York with Kurt Russell in the big brawl, really the first professional wrestler to have a role in a movie that became kind of mainstream and really started getting filmmakers looking at professional wrestlers as potential actors in their films. I mean, that's way before Mr. Nanny and Kindergarten, whatever he was. You know, I mean, like any of that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And so it was even before Rocky III, which Ox originally was scheduled. Originally, Ox was signed to play the wrestler in Rocky III. You know, he tells the story.
Yeah.
I've been sitting on this documentary here I cut. I mean, we filmed, me and Rob, years ago that, you know, sooner. I mean, I'm getting to the point now where it's getting time that I'm actually going to get to cutting this thing. We've got 70 hours of footage, but he tells the story there that, you know, he was
he had an agreement with Stallone to be the guy in Rocky III, and then all of a sudden, you know, Stallone saw AWA television and saw Hogan, and then he reneged on his deal with Ox, which Ox, when he's telling the story, says when he got the call, he said, well, okay, well, do me a favor and tell Mr. Stallone not to call me anymore, you know. It is, but, you know, Ox Baker is alive. He lost his wife last year, and, I mean, for me, I told Ox, man, like, if we don't do it while you're still, when this documentary is done, when finally people see it and we really put it together right, I know that someday we are going to get you in the WWE Hall of Fame. So certainly if Abdullah the Butcher, and I'd say he does belong there, certainly if he belongs there, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that Ox's first match in the WWF was in 1967 at the Market Street Arena in Philadelphia. I was 7 years old. I was there. And at that time, he worked as the Arkansas Ox. And it was a handicap match. It was him and Armand Hussein, who he traveled with at the time, versus Gorilla Monsoon. And at that time, he was the Arkansas Ox, a big, friendly, bumbling country bumpkin. He didn't have the mustache and the eyebrows. He wore big, thick, black horn-rimmed glasses and overalls. And so, I mean, there's a history there. And I guess when they brought him back in at some point, in the late 70s or the 80s, there's all kinds of stories about either he pissed somebody off or somebody didn't like the way he worked or whatever. But there's just – there's no – at one point or another, Ox literally – I mean, you talked to Lanny Poffo, Randy Savage, about the business they did in the late 70s after Escape from New York with their father's promotion that they all ran, and they were just packing people in everywhere, and because Ox was such a great heel. And so – he belongs in that Hall of Fame more than anybody, in my opinion. You know, that didn't make their name in like the national expansion era. But as far as veterans in the business that had such an impact on everything else that came after, Ox Baker's number one, man, and the greatest talker in the history of the business. You know, other than maybe Rick Flair, Bobby Heenan. You know, after that.
Well,
you know,
no, I agree with you. Hopefully, Abdullah is opening the doors for other people that they might have shunned in the past due to content.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't believe, man, somehow we ended up talking wrestling tonight. Not even talking indie wrestling. Like, we're talking this shit, man, tonight.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, don't you guys agree with me, man, that all those great jobbers, like, of the 80s, you know what I mean? Like the guys I was mentioning earlier, you know, like the standards, you know, Iron Mike Sharp, Tiger Chung Lee, like these, you know, Steve Lombardi. I mean, these guys belong in the Hall of Fame, you know, more than a fucking actor.
I'm surprised Lombardi isn't in it because, he was working with WWE for, you know, a long time. I think he's still working for them.
Who's that?
Lombardi.
Oh, Lombardi. Yeah, I think he does still work for him. Yeah, but he would be an obvious choice to me. You know what I mean? It's hard to think of who all they've, you know, passed over. I mean, but like I said, most of these ones that we bring up that are the most glaring, like a Savage or a China. I mean, there's pretty well known. Kind of like, you know, backstage heat, kind of political reasons. But shit, I mean, you know, I think if Brett and Hogan and, you know, if Brett and Hogan could get over their shit between them and Vince, I think that it's a lock for China and for, you know what I mean, Savage.
I think it also has to do maybe with, you know, maybe they're just going to wait a little bit on those people because... I don't know. They're kind of goofy with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like let some time pass by so that what they're thinking about is not the shit. So how about this one? I got one that you're never going to see put in there that belongs in there right after Ox Baker as far as achievements go. What year do you think it's going to be when they put Chris Benoit in the Hall of Fame?
Ooh.
Never. Ooh. Even though he's a better wrestler than half the people in there.
When
Never.
Do you think they'll finally put Chris Benoit in the Hall of Fame?
Never.
I don't think they'll put Chris Benoit in the Hall of Fame. Does he deserve it?
Of course he does.
On a wrestling wise, yes.
And let's not even Let's not even get into the other conversation. We don't need that. Please.
we've been there.
Yeah, we've been there, and I just can't take it. Plus, every time I open my mouth, I get more people coming at me like I'm the biggest nut job that ever.
Telling you that that's the reason they don't book you. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
however,
no.
Speaking of, and you know, I'm not, you know, asking you this question for you to blame anybody or tell me what went wrong or anything even near that. But since before this past 2 weeks, our last interview was in, I believe, November.
November.
So,
yeah.
I would love to ask you, you know, how it went down, and again, I'm not looking for specifics and chopping the move up or any of that, but cage of death, you came off the top of the cage and you suffered quite an injury. I mean, what was the extent of the injuries? How was your recovery?
Okay. Hairline fracture to the tibia.
Yeah.
Hairline fracture to the fibula. That's your two leg bones. Okay. Hairline fractures in both those. Three broken metatarsals, which are the bones on the top of your foot there that connect to your toes. So yeah, five broken bones. None of them severe fractures, but the metatarsal is broken and the other two fractures. I don't got any medical insurance, so for me it was, you know, keeping it elevated, hot and cold compresses, you know, soaking and shit. Yeah, I mean, you know, shit happens. I mean, what are you asking me? What happened? Why? Or what?
Well, no. I mean, I'm not trying to force you to any of that. I'm just saying that, you know, yeah, more or less what you told me, you know, and then coming off of that, you know, how'd the recovery and all of that go?
Well, it's never going to be totally healed. I still got patches of, like, blood clots and stuff that keep surfacing, like, to the front of my shin and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Because I didn't get myself put in a cast. I don't got medical or anything like that. I mean, it's never going to be healed completely.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm an idiot. So I was out walking on it a couple weeks later, like all over the country, you know what I mean? Just, you know, hobbling around on it. And of course I don't want to open up this can of worms, but we all know I did Carnage Cup in February and I got physical a little bit in there for Billy Graham and Danny Havoc beat me up again. You know what I mean? That damn bully.
Seeing as you did open that can of worms. Yeah, Carnage Cup and the IWA Deep South. I know you got some feelings there, and
Jesus Christ, I can't, you know. Boy, dude. I mean, look. This is all the farther this is ever going to go. So there's not going to be any more conversation about it. There's not going to be any more interviews about it. Okay. It's nothing personal, man. Really personal. I'm not claiming that the man mistreated me. I thought it was a good show. I thought it was a fun show, other than one stupid spot that should never have happened. If some of us knew it was going to go down, we would have taken steps to make sure that it didn't happen. I'm not faulting the person that even did that, because I don't think that he was aware of what the ramifications were of him doing something like that. I'm talking to him. I like the guy. You know, live and learn, but what my problem is and why, I mean, you're very obviously referring to the fact that right in the middle of all this other bullshit that last week I came out online and I instantly put out a disclaimer that myself and the Cult Fiction stable, label, brand name, colors, shirt, facsimile, titling, initials, catchphrases will no longer be affiliated or associated in any way, shape, or form with IWA Deep South. I'm not having much luck with IWA these days. Please, Pondo, open up and do something good. But anyway, really, this is the bottom line. The man did not mistreat me in any way, shape, or form. He gave me what I was agreed to. I had a good time on the show itself. But I got some family and friends up on the res that follow my shit in wrestling. They're fans. They watch the DVDs. bunch of my young nephews and cousins and shit up there that watch all this shit. And so, you know, I was real excited about the show. I told them about it. They get the show. And so now they're like, well, we got to get into this IWA Deep South now because that's where Billy's doing the shit. So they go on to Facebook and they, you know, start checking the promoter out and all this stuff. Next thing you know, I get an email. I get an email from one of my chiefs chastising me, putting me down. And what the fuck? Well, they don't use the word fuck. They, this thing Iroquois elders like to do is like they use the word suck instead of fuck. So, which I know that sounds, but you know, what the suck are you doing working for that sucking guy down there in sucking Alabama? And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, this guy's a sucking Ku Klux Klan. And I'm like, what? You know, and it's like, go on his face, you know. So, you know, I'm, you know, getting screamed at and everything. I go on there, and bottom line is that this promoter has either a membership or a support of a lot of extreme right-wing groups, several of them, the Congress of the South and the Southern, I can't think of their names right now. I'm having a brain fart. Give me a second, and I'll get it punched up here. Hold on one second, because I don't want to say this wrong. I don't want to be an ignorant slut. Anyway, I'm probably an ignorant slut. The Southern National Congress and the other, but the bottom line is two of these groups to start with are classified by the Southern Law Resources Center as hate groups. And they believe in what they believe in is that whites are superior to other races, that the South should secede from the United States, there should be a second civil war, that all non-whites should be ruled over by whites, and also he supports things like the Bible is against homosexuality Facebook page, and despite any misperceptions of me and the shit we talked all about all the way back at the beginning of the show, I'm not down with that shit. I've got plenty of gay friends, lesbian friends. I believe that we live in 2011, that people have a freedom of choice and they should be accepted. I don't believe in any kind of hate crimes, any kind of prejudice against anybody based on sexual preference, race, religion. I fought against it all my life. In real life, that's not some dummy playing a role on a message board. And I can't have my name associated with that stuff because it caused me damage, you know, in my real world and brought an embarrassment to my family, to Indian people, you know, because of all the things that we fought for. And it's not willing. So the bottom line is, if I wouldn't, I believe everybody has the right to their opinion. I believe everybody has the right to their belief. Falling short, I do not believe people are confused about what freedom of speech is, because I'll tell you what, first of all, freedom of speech is not protected by the United States Constitution when it's speech that incites hate and hate that can possibly incite criminal actions against people. Okay, that is not protected by the Constitution. These groups have definitely been found to be guilty of that. And don't anybody misunderstand any way, shape, or form, this man has a right to believe anything. If he wants to worship a fucking guinea pig and, you know, say that only redheaded men with one testicle should rule the earth, that's his right to believe that, okay? I'm not taking his right to believe that. Simply cannot have my own name, my brand name that I'm a part of, associated with anybody or anything that supports white separatism, white supremacy, racism, gay bashing, religious intolerance. I mean, you know, I don't care whether it's against a Muslim, whether it's against a Jew, whether it's against a Buddhist, or whether it's against a fucking Klingon. The bottom line is, no. Okay, I can't have my name associated with that. And then, of course, because all I did was come out and disassociate myself, I started getting death threats. And, you know, now this is in the middle of this shit with this other person. So, yeah, I'm kind of like the seed. On all sides.
have about maybe 5 minutes left tops. So, I mean, if you just want to give some, you know, last thoughts, anything you want to get out there before we wrap this up.
Well, I just hope that, you know, I hope that some of my people that I thought were friends were listening to what Joe and Joe both had to say earlier. Like I said, I'm not trying to rub someone's nose in shit. I'm trying to go back to a more peaceful, less angry thing. I don't reverse any of my situation on it. I by far don't want to be done with professional wrestling. I by far don't want it to be the end of Cult Fiction. I by far do not want to be done with CZW. You know what I mean? But I just, you know, on the other hand, I mean, I think bottom line is what makes the fans happy and what helps make it a good show. And I think that there's a lot of the fans that from those messages and everything I'm getting every day that want to see us be a part of CZW and anywhere else. So, I mean, once again, to the Cult Fiction fans and my supporters and friends, please let your voices be heard. For anybody that's misunderstanding my actions, getting angry at me and throwing me under a bus publicly, man, same way you wish I would kind of tone down myself, I wish you guys would pay me the same courtesy and understand that I'm just trying to come from the heart. I'm not trying to get something more for myself. I'm not trying to put myself over when it comes to, like, you know, accusing me of running my bro's name through the dirt. You heard it right from his dad and his brother, and I know that his sisters and his cousins feel the same way. I'm not doing any such thing. And, you know, just really, man, kind of like let's get through all this shit and let it heal. But if the end result is that I'm blackballed from the professional wrestling business, I mean, I don't even know what to say about that, man. I mean, because it's something that I'm never going to fucking get over because, you know, I'm not getting any younger and I've got a mad passion for it and I really want to still be there, man. So, you know, what do you think,
man?
You know, what do you guys think about that? Why don't you guys give me some feedback on that, man? You know, I
agree 100%. You know, I think, and I've always said this as well as, you know, anybody else, that I mean, you're one of the best managers in the business. Cult Fiction is one of the top factions in the business. You know, I mean, spent the whole time of last year ruling over CZW and being the top heel faction in CZW, and I don't think that the right move is to, you know, hey,
let me rephrase that for you. Let me rephrase it. It's bullshit that they're not. You guys aren't in CZW. Bullshit.
Right. So, but if at the end of the year the heel faction loses, that does not mean that they disappear for the entire next year. I think that's a ridiculous way of conducting business. But go ahead, Eric.
No, that's bullshit. Capital B U L L S H I T. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, damn. I'm glad to at least have. I know you guys support me, man. I just can't say.
I don't know what he's fucking. Don't. No, I'm gonna start it. You know, these are my views, so you know, I don't want anybody to get any heat for it. But you know, come on, man. Like really, like he fucking screwing up. Like they're screwing up like big time.
Yeah. Well, you know. That's, you know, it comes with indie wrestling. I mean, you can only hope for so much as a fan, and, you know, hopefully we'll get what we want.
I mean, you kind of think that, you know, business is business, right? I mean, certainly right now I think maybe I'm somebody that, with all this shit that's gone on, certainly not out of people's minds. So I think maybe, you know, smart businessman might want to exploit it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, but bottom line is, man, we all know, man, Cult Fiction's to the death, and I'm not fucking dead yet. So
sure is.
Neither are my boys, and that includes JC. He might be, his body might not be here walking amongst us, but his spirit is looming large, and you know, you heard what his dad had to say about that tonight, and so I mean, I dare say that I know he wouldn't want me to fucking, you know, give up on it. You know what I mean? I know how much he loved it and how much he was proud to be associated with Cult Fiction. And you can hear it in his voice anytime he said the words in any promo you're watching him. And, you know, hopefully, man. I mean, I miss everybody in Philly, man. I miss everybody in the locker room. I miss everybody that sets up the ring, that takes the tickets, that sells the food. I miss seeing all my friends in the, you know, in the parking lot and at the front door. And I miss the guy the guy that's spitting at me in the front row over by the time bell that I wouldn't get out of the way of. It kid, that, I mean, you know, I'm fucking, that's a character out there, man. I miss the whole thing, so. I'm game, man. I'm anxious to get started anytime I get a phone call, man. So, like,
absolutely, Billy.
All you fans,
we look forward
to
seeing
you. Yeah, okay, brother. All right, man. Well, thanks for having me again. And listen, one thing I'll put out there. Shout out to Kickboxer. And listen, one of these times, what I'd like to do is come on, because I've been getting mocked a lot about the stuff I talked about with the politics and the guns and tanks and stuff like that, and people saying that I claimed that me and my friends were Terminators and tank shells were bouncing off me, which I said, no such thing of the sort. Educate yourself. Learn a little bit about the history of the Six Nations people in the last 20 years and the political struggle that's going on. Yes, these things are real, and I'm hoping maybe in one of your future shows here, maybe I can get my brother and a couple other people from the Reds to come on the show, and maybe you get another whole part of the whole Billy Graham story when you find out about what all that shit's about, and, you know, talk about everything from, you know, American Indian Movement, political struggle, Leonard Peltier, John Trudell, that me and Kickboxer were talking about last week, and hear the whole story of when Billy Graham, you know, put his beliefs to the point of, you know, having people try to put bullets in his head, man, you know, like, and get that all out,
man,
and get that cleared up, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. Anytime, you know, it's been a great 2 weeks. Anytime, you're more than welcome to come on. Just let me know. You know the number, Billy, and
thank you, and you know what my last words will be tonight, brother, is this, man. My Lakota brothers always have a saying, and this is what it is, Hokehe. And what Hokehe translates to meaning is that today is a good day to die.
Take care, Billy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, take care, Billy.
Yeah, wait.
Well, yeah, man. Everybody out there. That was Billy Graham again, and you know what it is, man. He's a great guest, and you got to check us out next week, next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Shout out to Wrestling Soup over there. Shout out to all of our listeners, whether it be in the States, chat room, archive, live, from the U.K. to Germany, from Melt to Andrew Dixon, to Juan, to Nicole, to everybody out there. I'd like to give you all a huge thank you. Check us out next week. We got a whole lot of stuff to run down. We're going to bring you all sorts of entertainment that we can do. And for Eric Williams, I'm J-Cat Morris. We'll check you out next week, Thursday, live, 9 p.m. Eastern. Peace.